Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your Thursday morning drive. How's it going? It is Thursday, which means on this show it's Triple Play Thursday. Give me a Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get those requests. We'll play them later on in the show. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Rod Pyle is going to join us. He's one of my favorite guests, man. He's an author. He's a journalist. He's editor-in-chief at Ad Astra magazine for the National Space Society. He is our space expert. And there's a lot of space news to talk about. We're gonna, we're gonna go back and talk about Area 51, and lots of stuff happened on this date in history. And he did go out to see the movie Ad Astra with Brad Pitt, and we'll get his review on that. Always a lot of fun when Rod is on. And any space or outer space related questions or things that you want to talk about, you can call us or text us. Rod's going to be with us in just a few minutes. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I still haven't had a chance to catch up with Ad Astra. I didn't see it over the weekend. The schedules and stuff didn't work out. So I still haven't seen it, but I hear good things about it. I hear it's a lot more esoteric and weird than people expected it to be. Not just kind of a straightforward sci-fi kind of a action adventure kind of a thriller, but it's really kind of a heady, weird movie. And I think it might drop at the box office pretty big over the weekend. I'm gonna catch up on it this weekend, because the only movie that's really coming out, there's only two movies that are really coming out this weekend. You got the Judy Garland thing with Renee Zellweger and Abominable, which is I'm hearing really good things about that movie, by the way. You know, which is exciting considering it's a DreamWorks movie, and they hit and miss. DreamWorks, like, hit and miss. But I guess it's from the writers of the How to Train Your Dragon movie, and I love all three of the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I love those movies. So I'm looking forward to that. So I think maybe at some point I'll be able to squeeze in Ad Astra just to catch up on it. So, but anyway, we'll talk with Rod, all kinds of space stories, and all. It's always a lot of fun to talk with Rod Pyle anyway, and he'll be here in just a few minutes. So today, we like to celebrate anniversaries on this show. Today marks the first episode of The Brady Bunch, 50 years ago. A lot of 50-year things happening. I guess 1969 must have been like a pretty crazy year in terms of things that debuted or things that happened, because we've been doing a lot of 50th anniversary things here on the show. And The Brady Bunch premiered on this date 50 years ago, so we're going to talk about The Brady Bunch and some of our favorite moments and favorite episodes, and even if the show is stupid, which it was. I watched it every day after school when it was on Channel 32. I'd get home from school and I'd watch The Brady Bunch, and I thought the show was stupid. You know, I only legitimately laughed at one episode of The Brady Bunch. The rest of the time I would just kind of watch it, but it became such a, you know, cultural phenomenon, and it was just part of the zeitgeist, especially, you know, in the late 70s and into the early 80s. In mid 80s, it had this resurgence of popularity because it was hugely popular late 60s, early 70s when it ran, you know, first run. But the reruns and syndication is what really made it huge. But yeah, we'll talk about The Brady Bunch, and then we want to talk about the best TV family, sitcom families. best and worst TV sitcom families. We'll get into that, too. Now, you know, historical conspiracies happen all the time, especially when we talk about space, because there are still people out there who think that the moon landing was fake. And then we have the whole Area 51 thing that has popped up this, you know, this year. And we're going to talk a lot about that. But we also have other historical conspiracy theories that are pretty ridiculous. So we're going to talk about conspiracy theories as well this morning. Those are some of the things we're going to do. You know, if you're new to the show, during Blackhawks season, preseason, all the way through postseason, and yes, there will be a postseason this year, preseason all the way through postseason, if my show the night before follows a Hawks game, we play the Blackhawks Express. We followed an unfortunate Hawks game last night against the Capitals. Preseason game, and so we always play the Blackhawks Express. The Blackhawks Express is a really great, like, 3 to 4 minute piece that the guys here, producers and sports department, all the guys that work on in the sports department and editors, put together a really cool package. They call it Blackhawks Express, and it just sums up the previous game with your highlights and all the cool stuff. So we'll play our first Blackhawks Express of the season. It's a preseason game from last night. So we always play that at about 4:45 the morning following a Blackhawks game. So, all right, so that's what's coming up on the show. Rod Pyle in space. If you want to jump in with any space-related questions, it's 312-981-7200. Brady Bunch turns 50. We'll talk about that. Talk about some of the best and worst TV family TV families, and some conspiracy theories right here. So there you go. So put on your tinfoil hats and get ready. So that's what's coming up on the show. Triple Play Thursday, again, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. It's 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call for talk or text anytime you want to jump in with any kind of the conversation, and especially very soon if you want to have a space conversation with Todd, with Rod. We will do that. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also, download our podcast, subscribe. We have a lot of people who subscribe to our podcast, like a lot, and we want to thank you for that. It's very, very cool and very, very humbling. But it's a great way to listen to the show. If you're not up between 1 and 5 a.m. every weekday morning, you can listen at your leisure, bro. Just go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, or WGNRadio.com. Check it out. Subscribe. Every second of every show is podcast. It's free. It'll be sent to your device automatically. And again, you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's the show this morning. We've got underway, and we're going to have a lot of fun on this Thursday morning, and we would love you to join us. So my producer is Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Big Brother's over.
Big Brother has reached its conclusion.
And so is the so have the Cubs.
How fitting.
Yeah. Cubs and Big Brother end on the same night. Mm. The Cubs were just a disaster in September. It was just an absolute disaster.
I mean, we were waiting on this to finally happen. Yeah. We knew the nail was coming, but this
really
is
interested to see what happens during off season here, to see what's going on.
There are reports that the Angels are looking at Madden, trying to court him.
Yeah. Well, his contract is up.
Mm-hmm.
The guy did bring us a World Series, and I will say this, we were in the postseason. This is the first time we haven't made the postseason in 4 years, so that's good, you know, but it was a rough season.
Really, absolutely
really rough. And the Cubs have kind of been borderline disappointing now for about 3 seasons, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I wish Madden the best. If they choose not to, you know, to re-sign him, if he goes someplace else, I wish him the best. I'm a fan of Joe Madden. I know a lot of people can't stand him, including my dad. My dad can't stand Joe Madden. I'm a fan. I like the guy, and he brought us a World Series. So, and there was also rumors that Theo was leaving, Boston and all this other stuff. I'm like, no, that's not going to happen.
Probably not, but for all the hate that Madden gets, you also have to look a little bit above him as well at Epstein. I mean, it's not like some of the acquisitions and, you know, trades weren't happening at that level.
There's going to be a shakeup in many management positions, I think, during the offseason.
The front office is looking a little shaky.
Yeah, there's going to be some changes made. There's no question about it. But it was a very disappointing Cubs season. I still love my Cubbies, and I'll probably end up watching the games this week this weekend, because it's baseball and I love it. And, you know, the official hockey season hasn't kicked off yet. So, but Big Brother ended exactly the way that I thought it would end, considering the final three, who the final three were. I was not happy with the winner. I think the person who won Big Brother is a jerk and an a-hole, but he played a great game. You got to acknowledge the gameplay. You really do. And the guy played Big Brother and he played it great. Don't like him. Don't think he deserves to win. Well, he deserves to win because he played the game. But as a person, ugh. So, and then, you know, the Nicole, I love Nicole, but she did, you know, she did win the America's Favorite. So I was happy about that. Yeah. Yeah. She won 25 grand as that. And there was no way that she wasn't going to win America's Favorite. The final three were Cliff, Tommy, and Nicole. And those were my three favorite house guests of the season. But by far, Nicole. Absolutely. And she had well over 1 million votes. And she was freaked out when she found out. That was really great.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Big Brother ended. I hate the guy who won. But I got to admit, he played a great game. Overall, it turned out to be a pretty entertaining season. It started out pretty rough. Started out like, man, I'm going to have a hard time watching this season with these idiots. But then I grew to like a few people, especially Nicole and Tommy and Cliff. And a couple, I like Kat because she's like maybe the dumbest player in the history of the game. And Sis is an idiot. I didn't realize how stupid Sis was until last night's episode. I was like, wow, she's really dumb. And there was some entertainment. I'm a fan of Christy. I know everybody hated Christy. She cried all the time. She was like the yoga girl who was all spiritual. And I liked her. I actually liked her. I thought she was fun. But the person who won it. We all knew that was going to happen. And then but you know, it was one of the highlights of last night of the finale. Tom Green in the front row.
True. I kind of hoped that he would get to do a musical number.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Daddy, would you like some sausage? But the thing is, Julie did not plug a celebrity Big Brother.
She did not,
which is weird. She did say if you want to apply for Big Brother next summer, go to casting at CBS. Mm-hmm. But she didn't mention a celebrity Big Brother, which makes me a little sad because I enjoy celebrity Big Brother.
It's a lot of fun, but... You know?
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, Big Brother's over. Cup season is over. But we're looking forward to more stupid TV because a lot of it debuted this week, including The Masked Singer, which I have on my DVR, which debuted last night, but I didn't watch it. I'm going to watch it in the morning.
You're going to have to watch it because you sing its praises.
I'm watching it in the morning. As soon as I get home, I'm watching The Masked Singer.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It is really... I just want you to be prepared. It's the stupidest TV show that you will ever see in your life.
All right.
But it's awesome. And if somebody says it's the worst show, how can you watch that show? It's the worst show I've ever seen. I'd be like, I understand why you have that viewpoint, because it really truly is the stupidest show I've ever seen, but I can't stop watching it. So, 2-hour premiere too.
2 hours?
2 hours, man.
Oh man,
buckle up.
Oh, geez.
All right. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how you doing, man?
Hey, we're doing very well, Nick.
Good, good, good. Disappointing about the Cubs, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a big football guy. You're a big Bear guy. So you got we're only at the beginning of the season, really. So you got a full football season.
Yeah,
to look forward
that's
to.
What I mean. The pain's a little less because the Bears have ramped
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
And plus, the writing was kind of on the wall.
Oh,
the last
absolutely,
week,
but, with no question about it. Listen, the collapse against
colossal this month.
Yeah, especially the collapse against St. Louis. At home. I mean, that
four
was
four straight. You know, yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. Well, we're looking forward to more sports fun and all that other kind of stuff. So listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Rod Pyle is going to join us. One of our favorite guests. He's an author, a journalist, and an absolute expert on the world of space. And if you want to join in with any space related stories or comments, questions, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Rod will be with us.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words,
yeah,
baby, kiss me.
There you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll play them a little bit later. Coming up, it's the 50th anniversary of the first episode of The Brady Bunch. So we're going to talk about the Brady Bunch and some of the best sitcom TV families of all time. And we got conspiracy theories to talk about as well. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. For any time you want to jump in. Right now, though, if you've got a question or a comment or a concern or something about the world of space, now's the time to call or text, because we're going to be talking to Rod Pyle. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Our guest right now is author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine for the National Space Society, and great guy all around. That would be Rod Pyle. Let's welcome Rod to the show. Hey, Rod, how you doing?
Good, Nick, and good morning to you, and you're an even greater guy.
Oh, come on now.
No, really.
I appreciate you joining us, and as always, we would like you to give a little background for people who might be new to the segment. Tell everybody who you are and how you got to be the spaceman that you are.
The spaceman. So I was born about the same time NASA was, a little earlier, but not too much.
Yeah.
And grew up with that during the space age, with that golden era going on. So by the time I was, 10 and 11, they were heading off the moon every couple of months, and it was really an amazing time to be alive. So I was galvanized by that. Not really interested in sports, I'm sad to say, at least not like my friends were. And always wanted to do something with space, but if you've seen pictures of me, being an astronaut is not in the future for a bunch of reasons.
Uh-huh.
So after kind of not doing so great in science in college, I mean, I took years of it, but it wasn't clicking. Like, I knew I was going to be at best an average astronomer or physicist, but I hoped I could do better in the creative side. So that's when I got off into TV, and I worked in documentaries and educational films, visual effects on Star Trek, then started writing space books in 2005. And that in the magazine is all I do now, and apparently a little bit more TV, because I'm shuffling back in that direction again.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Well, we can play a little catch up here after we do the 1:30 news. We're going to jump into. We got a lot of space stuff to talk about, and you did see Ad Astra, the movie.
I did, because of you.
Yeah, and I didn't see it.
I got to hold the spoilers back.
You can say whatever you want to say, but I'm really curious as to what you think of it. And what I know about it is that it's not what it seems as advertised. What people are telling me, it's a lot more esoteric and kind of heady than you would expect, like, a Brad Pitt space adventure to be.
Yeah, it's kind of like a psychologically deep, high-concept Jerry Bruckheimer film with a lot of powder in it.
Well, listen, when we talk about Ad Astra, the movie, a little bit later on, tell us about Ad Astra, the magazine.
Okay. Oh, tell you now?
Yeah.
Oh, Ad Astra, the magazine. is the magazine that I edit and write for the National Space Society. They've been in business since the mid to late 70s, started by Wernher von Braun and then merged with an organization called the L5 Society. It was started by a Princeton physicist named Jerry O'Neill, who was big into space colonies. And they've been going strong ever since. The magazine started in the 80s, I think, and I've been doing it for about 2.5 years, I guess. And it's a big project for a really small crew, but it's a lot of fun, and you've seen a couple of copies of it.
Yeah.
It turns out well for
a
small, moderately funded effort. And, it just so happened. We heard this movie's coming out, same name of the magazine. I'm thinking, oh, man, there's a real PR opportunity here. But, we're a little nonprofit. You can only do so much. But, we're getting a little extra attention. And we've been handing them out at theaters here and there throughout the country.
Oh, that's smart.
Because it just made sense. Yeah.
That's smart. And what I just realized what Ad Astra means. Tell everybody what Ad Astra means, what it translates
to. The stars,
yes.
In Latin.
In Latin, to the stars.
Yeah. Kind of inspiring, isn't it?
It's very inspiring.
Every now and then, people kind of look at the cover sometimes and go, Ad Astra, what does this mean? And once you explain it, they go, oh, okay, I get it. But it does take a minute to explain it.
Yeah, and that's another thing about the movie itself. Like, some people are like, what does that mean? Like, just, this is a mainstream Hollywood movie starring one of the biggest movie stars in the world, and it's called Ad Astra, and it's called Ad Astra, and it's just confusing people, I think, a little.
Well, and it would have made so much more sense to say, I hate my daddy, But I guess they didn't figure that was going to be compelling enough.
That's not going to be. I don't think that's going to put butts in seats. But yeah. So so Ad Astra, really. But by the way, you guys do a great job with that magazine. You do it. It's really wonderful.
It's a blast to do, and one of these days I got to get you to write an article on why you like Interstellar.
It's the monthly mention of Interstellar.
Monthly harassment of Nick. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
well, but you can always bust me for liking that other movie.
Well, it's funny because my old producer Dan Chigrou was also a big fan of Interstellar, so I had somebody in my corner. My producer now is Tom Hush, and he can't stand Interstellar. So,
now, is it because of the movie or is it because of Matthew McConaughey?
It's because of the movie. it's not good, man.
No, it's a great movie.
I thought actually. The real Matthew McConaughey was the one he portrayed in Contact.
Ah, well, that could be.
Kind of schmucky, religious zealot that ruins everything. Yeah.
Ruins everything and wears scarves in every scene.
Yeah, was probably driving a Lincoln Town Car when he left, right?
That's right. After doing a billiards trick, that's the thing.
Yes.
So,
yes.
All right, Rod, hang on, all right?
Okay.
All right, cool. Rod Pyle is with us. The monthly harassment of my love for Interstellar. I still stand by it. I think Interstellar is a great movie, and a great movie, perhaps Nolan's best. So, Tom's just shaking his head. All right, Rod Pyle is with us, and we'll get back to it and the conversation here. And if you want to jump in, we got a lot to talk about. But if you have some space questions or concerns or stories, it's 312-981-7200. And we'll be back after this and after the news right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live here in the Skyline Studio on 720 WGN, downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. And, there you go. You can get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Okay. Rod Pyle is with us. He is an author, a journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine, and a space expert. And if you have any comments or questions about space-related issues, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Get him in now. Let's welcome Rod back. Rod, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
All right. So the Area 51, the whole Area 51 raid thing happened last week. But for people who are not as familiar, when did the Area 51 thing... When did it really start?
I think the guy first posted the thing on June 27th, a guy named Matty Roberts, and it was, depending on who you listen to, is either a tongue-in-cheek gag or a little bit of performance comedy. But, he kind of didn't see what would happen, and then, within a month, a couple million people say, I'm going, and another million or billion and a half said, I'm interested. And you know how it is with those things on Facebook or wherever. They say they're interested, and it's like, yeah, they're not coming. But, a couple million people said they're going to come, and the Air Force who runs this area out in Nevada, this test range, said, no, you're not. You better not.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the signs from it, it's like, back off, no photography, no drones, deadly force is authorized. We have motion detectors in the ground. We have cameras everywhere. We got satellites trained on this place. Go away. And the CIA didn't even... verified the thing existed until 2013. So it's kind of a spooky area, and I don't think you want to go crash the gates. That said, I guess it didn't really come off as planned.
Yeah, no, it didn't. It really didn't. When did the whole alien association thing start with Area 51?
So the area was set up as an auxiliary landing strip in 1942, and then 1947... was the Roswell incident, quote-unquote, in New Mexico, where this supposedly saucer-shaped thing came down and crashed or landed and was trucked off to Area 51. And, the official report says, look, it was a spooky-looking weather balloon-type thing that we were using to spy on the Russians and listen to subsonic signals from nuclear explosions and, you know, try and steal their nuclear secrets. But if you're more prone to looking for conspiracies, a lot of people thought, nah, this is a UFO and you captured a couple of alien, or recovered a couple of alien bodies. And over the years, we've all seen some evidence of that, probably faked, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that, you know, that's where they're hiding everything. So they wanted to go find out.
And the, I've always thought the Area 51 thing was kind of like hilarious, but also interesting in that, you know, I mean, any conspiracy theory, we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories later on in the show, but I always always find conspiracy theories to be sometimes ridiculous, but many times fascinating, mostly because of how many people buy in.
Well, I was going to say the fascination for me is how much energy goes into it. And we've talked about this before. I think part of it is, you know, if you kind of have an interest in science, science fiction, futurism, that kind of stuff, and you want to be kind of important, you can either go to school for a lot of years and pay a bunch of money and get a master's or a doctorate in some field that lends itself to that. Or if that's not quite your strut, then you can be like me and write about it instead, because it's easier than learning all that stuff. Or you can watch YouTube videos and read our internet articles and just decide that, you know, the spooky stuff is true. And I think that makes a lot of people feel kind of special, you know. And it's the same reason I like NASA, frankly. It's being part of something bigger than you, a movement, a belief system, whatever mine happens to be. You know, I think science is amazing enough by itself, but if you're of a different kind of mindset, or you don't trust the government, then this becomes really appealing. What I think is kind of cool about Area 51, so it's this big salt flat, you know, it's crap land out in the middle of Nevada,
right,
that nobody in their right mind would want. But and I think the nearest town is like 100 people, you know, it's tiny.
Yeah.
But it's also called a bunch of other names. One of them is Dreamland, and I remember years ago when North American Rockwell was trying to get the B-1's bomber signed off on, as I recall the story, the Air Force is saying, you know, it's not stealthy enough. It's got too big a radar signature. So supposedly a couple of Rockwell pilots took the thing up and did an unauthorized low-level pass over Area 51 just to prove that they wouldn't be able to spot it easily. And I think it had the radar signature about the diameter of a dinner plate or something. But what a cool thing to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I can't verify that, but that's the version I heard. But I know they worked on the U-2, the NASA version of the SR-71, the B-1 bomber out there. So they've done a lot of kind of sneaky stuff out there, and that's what it's for. You know, it's the big classified testing zone.
Right, exactly. I want to talk about this, Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us thing, and how it really went down. But what are some of your other favorite Area 51 related stories? Do you have any over the years?
Well, that one I think was my single favorite, just because it's such a hot dog pilot thing. You know, I don't really keep that much track of them because it's not something that I'm very invested in, but there have been people I know that have tried to take ATVs and dirt bikes up to the fence area, and they kind of, you know, get chased off by the black helicopter crowd, and they come back, or sometimes it's guys in Jeeps. I don't think it's mined or anything. It's just there's a fence and there's a bunch of signs. They basically say, if you come in here, we can shoot you. They probably wouldn't, but they can. And that was the same kind of warning that people got at the gate. You know, it's like, you know, if you want to come stand out there, that's your business. Cause I think it's run by the Park Service beyond the actual perimeter of the installation. But if you start going on their territory, you're going to have a bad day. But as you probably read, I've seen different numbers. I've seen 40 people showed up, 150 people showed up. Washington Post said 2,000 people. It probably depended on where you were, because I think the 2,000 figure included the Alien Music Festival, where they're calling it the Alien Stock down the road.
Right.
But they said that, you know, the people were over there chatting up the Park Service guards and having a good time, and they were being friendly, and it turned out okay. It's just good that it wasn't tens of thousands of people, because that could have been iffy.
Yeah, and I saw some of the footage, you know, because obviously, you know, the news covered it. You know, and I saw some of the footage, and there didn't seem to be a whole lot of people, and you know, a lot of the vendors were mad because I guess they had the festival and they closed down a day early, And they were like, what am I going to do with? Because they were so excited.
They had all their T-shirts,
yeah,
right?
They got their T-shirts, and they got their alien masks and their little other trinkets that they were going to sell. And not, I mean, it was, you know, it was really not as many people even remotely showed up as they had hoped.
It was kind of like when I went up to the eclipse in 2017 in Oregon, and this town, which was just a couple dozen miles off the, or not even that much off the center point of the shadow, you know, we're going down the main street, and there are banquet tables lined up on both sides of the main street, this tiny town with people with T-shirts and eclipse glasses and eclipse beer and eclipse coffee and all this stuff. I mean, they were set up for hundreds of thousands of people to come through. And there's this little trickle of traffic, and myself and my kid and my and a friend of mine driving down there. And all these people with stacks of stuff that you can see is the joke sign of, like, you know, $10 crossed out, $5 crossed out.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It was kind of depressing. So I think that happened here, too. And they canceled one music festival. The responsible guy canceled it. And the other one said, well, we'll still give it a shot. But, you know, they got a few hundred people. But, I mean, I think, you know, one thing I'd say good about it, and I think that was pointed out in the article you sent me the link to, is there was kind of a coming together of like minds.
Yeah.
And they were there for fun. It was kind of like an extraterrestrial Burning Man, just really small, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. But no, I, you know, the, a couple of the articles that were interested, that I was interested in, was despite the low turnout and not as, you know, because people were like, oh, God, you know, thousands of people are going to show up. They're going to raid Area 51, this is going to be insane. It's going to be nuts. And it just turned out not to be that. But despite the fact of the low turnout, what I read is that, you know, you said like-minded people were there. Friendships were made. People had a really good time. And it was a really fun event for all the people, you know, the small amount of people that went. But they made sort of some lasting friendships and some bonding. And, so it seemed like it was a nice time for the people who showed up.
You and I should have decided to meet there. And Budweiser, never one to miss an opportunity, did promise free beer to any aliens that made it out of the base.
I didn't hear. I did not hear that. You got that. That's fantastic. Budweiser offered any free beer to aliens. There was kind of a really kind of a wonderful thing that was written in the Washington Post about someone's some of the real people that went. And, you know, the people that they made, the friends that they made along the way. It's a wonderful piece that we sent you the link to. And I think a lot of people should read that. And it's kind of fun. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to make fun of, you know, the conspiracy people and, you know, like, oh, Area 51, there's an alien there, if you don't believe that sort of thing. But just to see that they are, in fact, human beings who want to bond and make friends just like everybody else does. It's kind of a really fun piece to read.
Yeah, and even beyond the music festival, there was a lot of people playing music on their blasters and dancing and, you know, in silver LeMay spacesuits and all that. I can't wear those, but the other people that were there can.
Yeah.
And they said, I think you read, they parked their RVs next to each other and they'd hang out and sit and talk. The thing is, if you spend much time out there, I mean, at night, the sky is spectacular because you can see everything, probably even all those new SpaceX satellites going overhead in a flock.
Yeah.
But the daytime, it's this bleak, windy, this time of year, hot, nasty, dry, plantless, just billiard table flat expanse. So you're either staring off the distance drooling or you're talking to somebody else. So I think that really does kind of, you know, enhance those friendships because there isn't much distraction out there.
That's true. You know, and, you know, when people were describing this and what could happen when the whole thing, you know, when the whole thing broke, I pictured in my head, you mentioned the movie Contact, which is a movie that I absolutely love.
Yeah, I did too.
But you know, it's such a great movie. And I always, you know, when I was thinking about what could happen at Area 51, I was thinking about all of the people that showed up for what was going to be the launch. You know, and as Jodie Foster is driving through, and then there's the evil Jake Busey who's preaching, and all the people who have showed up. That's what I pictured maybe Area 51 was going to turn out to be, was like that sequence in Contact.
Ah, yeah. If only they had gotten the numbers, we could have seen something impressive there.
I wish Jake Busey would have shown up. That's the only thing.
Was it Jake or Gary?
No, Jake. It was his son. Jake Busey was the guy. Jake Busey's the guy who planted the bomb. He was the terrorist.
Yeah.
He was also the guy who pretended to be the preacher. That's Jake Busey. That's Gary Busey's son. I had him
so
on the
show. Not quite as hacked up looking as his dad.
No. And he's also not nearly as crazy as his dad. I, you know, I, did I ever tell you, Ron? Rod, did I ever tell you I spent about a week hanging out with Gary Busey for a full week?
No, why?
Oh, he was in town shooting a movie called Rookie of the Year, a baseball movie that was filmed here in Chicago,
man.
And involved the Chicago Cubs. He played a pitcher on the Cubs, and he was in town for a few weeks to film the movie. And I met him at China Club, of all places. I was dating a girl who really liked to go clubbing, which is not my thing. And we went into the private area because she was very attractive, and I had no business being with her because she was so hot. And we were able to get into the VIP room, and Gary Busey was there. And I just quietly went up and I said, listen, I don't want to bother you, but I just want to say that I'm a big fan of yours, and I absolutely loved you in Point Break. And as soon as I mentioned Point Break, his eyes lit up like a slot machine. And he went, Point Break, that movie changed my damn life. And then he just started telling me stories about Point Break, and then we started to, and he took a liking to me, and he gave me his phone number where he was staying at the Westin across the street from the Hancock building, and we hung out for like 6 days straight. And I don't know, I can't, in however you think hanging out with Gary Busey for six nights straight is, double that. That's all.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I had Jake Busey on the show to promote a movie, and he was in studio, and I was interviewing him, and I told him, you know, I ended up hanging out with your dad for like six nights in a row back in 1992, and Jake Busey just goes, "Oh God,"
I said, "I'm sorry."
Yeah, and he just looked at me, and he went, "Oh God," and I said, "Yeah, I got some stories," and he said, "Oh God, I bet you do," and so, but anyway, all right, we got a break. Rod, hang on, okay.
All right.
Rod Pyle is with us. The Area 51 thing was underwhelming for most people, but the people who did go had a great time. So good. Good for them. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news. No, not the news. We're going to come back, talk more with Rod. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. Triple Play Thursday. You made your request, dude. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Today marks the anniversary of the first episode of the Brady Bunch. And so we're going to talk about the Brady Bunch and then bust out some of our favorite and least favorite families on TV. You know, as we were just talking about Area 51, love talking about conspiracy theories, and we got a bunch of those that we're going to get to and talk about some of your favorites as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on 720 WGN. All right. Rod Pyle joins us usually once a month to talk all things space and outer space related. Lots of stories to talk about. Rod also saw the Brad Pitt movie Ad Astra, and we'll get his thoughts on that and much more. And if you have a question or a comment about outer space-related issues, you can text us or call us at 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Rod back to the show. Rod, welcome back.
Thank you. So can I let my age just hang out there for one moment?
Okay.
Okay, so TV families.
Yes.
Probably one of my least favorites. I wasn't a Brady Bunch fan, but I was probably kind of beyond the age curve slightly. But Space Family Robinson on Lost in Space.
Oh, sure.
Pretty pathetic. I mean, as a kid, I was a fan, right?
Yeah.
Especially because I saw the pilot. And in the pilot, which was black and white.
Yes.
Dr. Smith, the shrieking banshee who used to run around with his curlers all a dither.
Right.
Was a real badass.
Yes.
And then the series comes along and he turns this the kind of foppish, weird... The Butler did it, kind of got
right.
Like, what happened to him? He was this. We were supposed to believe. I think he was a Russian agent or something,
right?
And you know, he programmed the robot to kill people and all this.
Yeah,
and
he was supposed to be a total bad guy that was there to sabotage everything that they were doing on their on the mission. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh no, not me, take the boy. He was doing,
right.
And it was just ridiculous. But yeah, you know, like you. Rod, when I was a kid, I loved Lost in Space. I loved it.
And then, God bless you.
And as an adult, I went back and watched it, and I don't know, the budget for that show was like $7. The special effects and the sets were awful. But there's,
oh, my Lord.
But I still have a sentimental attachment to it, because as a kid, it was a show that I loved. And, you know, you can still watch it here on, you can watch it here on MeTV. On Saturday nights, and so, you know, it's still a lot of fun to go back and watch it, but I agree.
It is, and I met years later, I was taking a directing class, this kind of master class that UCLA had, and I did realize the guy that was teaching, who had done a bunch of really great TV and a few movies, I mean, he was a very fine director, had, I'm looking at his bio, and it's like, Lost in Space is on there, so I may have told you this before, but I went up to him after the third or fourth class, and he was pretty brusque, you know. He used to give us a lot of jabs and a lot of drubbings because he figured better to get it here than out of the real world, which he was right. So I went up and kind of sheepishly said, I just have one question. Why Lost in Space? And he looked at me and smiled, and he said, alimony payments. And I went, oh,
alimony payments.
But we got to talking, and I said, you know, when you guys really lost me was the episode where the aliens had black stockings pulled over their heads and white sequin top hats, you know. I mean, really? And he said, we literally, you know, we do script revisions because we couldn't afford what had been written, and he said we would literally go around the lot going through the dumpsters just to pick out whatever we could find and rewrite based on what they yanked in. And I thought, yeah, that's got some class,
you,
in a way.
Yeah, you and know? You know what, that you know, judging upon, you know, watching the show, that doesn't surprise me in the least that they were running around, you know, dumpster diving in order to get costumes and props. That just the way, and that's the way the show feels too. But I mean, you know, it's got Dr. Smith, and you know the lead, Will Robinson, that I was around that age when I watched the show.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like he was my identifier. Like Billy Mumy was like the kid I was like, oh, he's the coolest because he's in, you know, he's doing this. And it has one of the most iconic robots in science fiction history.
What
you know?
A great robot. Yeah,
yeah, completely great. Yeah, but I still, I don't know. And then what did you think of the, the movie version where Gary Oldman played Dr. Smith? Yeah.
Not a fan. And yeah. And I tried to watch the series reboot.
Netflix.
Came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was okay, but I just couldn't stick with it. It got a little too, you know, they're trying to be interesting. Dr. Smith is a psychotic woman.
Yeah.
And I think there was some, not a transgender, but a gay couple or something. And, you know, they were doing a lot of nods towards modernity, which I appreciated.
Right.
And the robot was kind of cool. And it was much more deeply scripted and so forth. But it just didn't get me. I'm still waiting, and we only have a couple more months for that next season of The Expanse. Because I think under Amazon, the way they spend money on television, when I was working on Deep Space Nine, I think the average episode was $800,000 or something.
Yeah.
And a big one was $1.3 million. And I was watching Carnival Row last month,
which
I thought was quite good.
Yeah.
They must be spending $7-8 million an episode on that show. They got to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, I've not watched it. But I mean, the commercials and the trailers look pretty great. So,
man, I'm never ahead of you on watching stuff. What's going on?
There's a lot to watch. I don't know. There's, you know,
are you working every night or something?
Yeah, I am. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, I'm working every night.
Okay.
Yeah, which I'm happy to be. I will say this: as far as the reboot on Netflix of Lost in Space, I watched it. I got through it all the way, and I thought it was kind of interesting. But I really liked Parker Posey. I did. I thought Parker Posey. I thought Parker Posey was really great. And I thought that casting and that. That twist on Dr. Smith was kind of interesting, but I'm a big Parker Posey fan. So
well, and anything, you know, after the original Dr. Smith, anything is a relief. As a young man, I remember him being left alone with Will by the campfire on Planet 14, thinking, "Is that really appropriate the way he acts to leave him alone with that young boy?" And then the robot got so weird, where you know.
Yeah.
It was playing the guitar with its claw.
Right.
And then another time it's saying, Will, hold my claw. I'm scared.
Right.
And I thought, come on, you guys. This is worse than worse camp than Batman. Yeah. This is just way off the
all
rails.
Right.
But Rod, so here we are, way off the rails. Yes, sir.
Rod, hang on. Rod Pyle is with us. Everybody hold on. We got some texts coming in, some calls coming in, questions that are space related for Rod Pyle. And we'll get to those right after the news, which is up next. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has your opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran and the gang at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we are going to be talking about conspiracy theories a little bit later on, as well as TV families and the Brady Bunch. All coming up, and we all want you to join us. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. Rod Pyle is with us right now, author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. He is an outer space expert, and if you have any questions or concerns or anything like that in, about space, 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Rod back. Rod, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Let's see. We got a caller here. Here's Lulu on WGN. Go ahead, Lulu.
Hi, Nick. Hi, Rod. Hey, I'm going to wander off the path a little bit, but I have two questions, and then I'll hang up. If I could get an explanation of black holes for dummies, and then the second part is, what is your opinion of what's happening in the Milky Way's black hole? They discovered that it really lit up a while back, like by 75%. Increase in light emitting from it, and maybe what does that mean? So I will listen for your answer.
All right. Well, thank you, Lulu. Okay.
Thanks.
So black holes for dummies first, Ron.
Yeah. So, oh boy, this goes back a ways. My astrophysics are from the 70s, before we even really knew very much what they were. But a large star that collapses and goes beyond neutron star stage, and after it goes supernova, and creates this kind of gravity well in space that sucks things in, and you have an event horizon around that where essentially time kind of stops, at least from the perspective of the outside, as I recall. And there are these divots in space-time, and we don't really know where they go, but I know there's been, in the last couple of years, there's been way more theories about stuff than I've seen probably in the 10 years prior. And then we had that incredible image from that, assembled from the ground telescopes, if you remember, from a couple of months ago, that image of a big orange ring. It looked like
right.
a big orange kind of a smoke ring.
Right, right.
It was a black hole. But that's kind of it. And as far as the one in the Milky Way, I caught that headline, but I was so caught up in all the Apollo 11 stuff, I didn't have a chance to really read it. What makes me nervous about, I mean, black holes are bad, but then you get things like those spinning stars that emit gamma rays, you know? And if some reason one of those gets a bad mood that's not too far away and shifts, it can wipe out life on one side of the planet in one very quick and bad afternoon. So that and asteroid scared me a lot more than the black hole at the center of the Milky Way. But I did spot that headline. I thought, ooh, that's exciting. I got to get back to that.
Yeah. Okay. It was such a big deal when that image of the black hole, remember we talked about
oh,
it?
Oh, man.
When the image of the black hole made all the news and everything, and everybody was really suddenly fascinated with black holes.
Well, and they're working on another one, and I think that one took a number of years. It was thousands of images. And they're working on another one that they say is going to be, I think, 10 times as sharp or something, so we'll actually be able to see some detail. And, I mean, you and I are old enough to remember a time before digital.
Yeah.
Right? Where, you know, film effects were done by layering and multi-printing and all that kind of stuff. And if you were doing this kind of astronomy work, it was multiple exposures that had to be blended into one exposure through physical means with optical printers and so forth. Now, I mean, digital technology has just changed everything so much. And there are people that take it for granted, but if you're old enough to remember a time before that when you had to go to the library and pull out that 3-foot-long file drawer to find a book, it's really just astonishing how much our world's changed in such a short time.
Yeah, that is. And I also remember that when, they started, you know, when that image of the black hole was shared with everyone and it made all the news and everything, then suddenly we all had to, like, reevaluate how that stupid Disney movie almost got it right.
Well, yeah, except for at the end, and I've complained about this before, but if I remember, and I saw it twice, once here and then once
right.
in Thailand, because I was desperate. I told you that story. I was desperate right. to see any film in English.
Right.
Because in 1980, there weren't many. And I remember at the end, even the second time, thinking, yes, this is every bit as hideous as I remember the first time.
Yeah.
Because the black hole looked like a tunnel made out of black fuzz, a tinfoil tunnel. And weren't those angels at the far end or something?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Angels or moths or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you guys thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, this is beyond, this is worse than Lost in Space.
Yeah.
You had money. And the only good thing in that movie was the Maximilian Schell and the robot. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. All right. Yeah. Let's see.
Okay.
815 area code says, I know there's a lot of space junk out there. Does Rod know how much junk is orbiting our Earth and when will it start falling away that we will really truly notice?
There's a number, it's in the I think, many millions of tons, if not more, because we've been shooting stuff up there since the 50s, and the Air Force tracks everything down to about the size of a softball with fairly high accuracy. They can track smaller, but there's a limit, of course.
Yeah.
And the problem is, even small things are dangerous. So the space shuttle years ago had a chunk of paint, a fleck of paint smaller than a dime, hit its window going at high speed in the wrong direction and almost took out the front pane of glass. Now, there's multiple layers, but that's how high energy that stuff
yeah.
is. So if you're talking about a paint chip doing that, if you've got something the size of a marble or a golf ball traveling at 17,500 miles an hour in the direction that you're not, then you go bye-bye. So there's a ton of junk up there. Then there's inactive satellites, active satellites, pieces of spacecraft. In terms of the fate of that stuff, there are a number of programs, different countries, some by corporations, other by governments, to try and figure out ways to bring it down or send it higher, but preferably bring it down. So there's an electromagnetic drag system the Japanese have been experimenting with that would actually sort of pull the stuff down indirectly. They've looked at nets. They've looked at laser fire to hit them. They've looked at big, sticky kind of meta fabric surfaces. So there's a bunch of different ways to do it. They're all very ingenious. What would be really great, though, and modern satellites have to have a deorbit mechanism. So if you're going to, even Elon Musk with his constellation of what's soon going to be 14,000 communication satellites up in low Earth orbit, each one has to have a system of getting back down once it fails, because they don't want that stuff just living up there. But the really cool thing, if you can figure it out, is you've got all these millions of tons of metal up there already. So if you want to build something up there, you collect the stuff and you melt it down and you separate out the impurities, and you can start making a lot of things on somebody else's dime, because some government like the USSR or the US spent millions of dollars launching that thing back in the day, and it's just up there waiting to be used. So that would be the cool thing.
Wow. Okay. All right. God, that's a lot of stuff up there, Rod.
Yeah, and it really, if you've ever seen the graphs, it looks like an electron cloud. There's so much of it, and I don't know if we're going to talk about it later, but this thing that SpaceX and now Amazon
yeah.
and OneWeb and a bunch of other companies want to do is launch all these low altitude, because communication and at this point internet satellites, the few that there are, mostly fly up at geosynchronous altitude, which is high enough to stay in one spot from our perspective. It you know, orbits at the same speed the Earth does, the Earth turns, and that's like 24,000 miles or so. But these new ones, these constellations that these guys are putting up of thousands and thousands of these things, will be flying at 320 to 380 miles. So the idea is it takes a lot less time for that signal to go back and forth, and they can be smaller because they're not sitting out there at 24,000 miles away. But there's got to be a lot of them because they're constantly moving overhead and they're handing off to each other. So the good thing is you've got like 90% of the planet or more will be covered by available broadband signal if you can afford a $200 ground station, they're claiming. So even in the middle of Africa, you'd be able to get internet, and that broadens education and the international conversation and peace efforts and all that. It also, of course, gives Coke and Nike and Chanel lots of other places to advertise and sell, which is what will happen. But you know, you've got a lot more traffic control up there. So all these companies are going to have to manage and track all their satellites. If any of them threaten anybody else's asset, you have to move it because it's your responsibility.
Wow.
That's a lot of work.
That is a lot, man. Wow. Jeez.
So, you know, there could be a career in both our futures, sitting at home staring at the screen being a controller of one of these satellites for SpaceX.
I think that sounds great. Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. You know? I see something up there. Oops, sorry.
All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
Yeah,
Rod Pyle is with us. He joins us monthly to talk all things space-related. He's an author, journalist, and he's a space expert. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's it going? We're live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. So Rod Pyle is with us. Author, journalist, space expert, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. Joins us once a month to talk space issues and space stories and stuff like that. Rod, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
Hey, I wanted to mention, I think congratulations are in order because you're going to be working on a documentary with Nat Geo about the right stuff, correct?
Yeah, so I worked on their Apollo 11 film last year, which was great fun. Really nice company, a bunch of guys out here in Los Angeles in the West Valley. And that turned out really well. And so they got another contract to do this doc on the right stuff. And as you probably know, National Geographic is doing a live-action dramatic reinterpretation of the right stuff with Leonardo DiCaprio. So I guess this is a documentary companion piece to that. But the thing that I thought would be so cool about talking to you about it is we're looking for materials from that era because this is all kind of told in the zen of the moment. So it's told as if you're in that time.
Right.
So there's none of this voiceover of God stuff and all that.
Right.
So we're reaching out. If anybody has got materials dating back from that time, so let's say your uncle or your grandfather was, you know, working on the launch pad or, you know, slinging hash at the cafeteria but got a picture with Gus Grissom or one of the Mercury astronauts. We're going from before Mercury up through Gemini,
right.
So it's that period before Apollo. We're reaching out to people, so if they've got something they want to get in contact, my email is coolspacenews@gmail.com. That's coolspacenews, just those three words, no periods or gaps. @gmail.com, and you know, if this stuff can be used, I'll be compensated for it by the company.
So you're looking for like audio recordings and pictures, home movies, anything,
exactly.
anything like that.
Yeah, you covered it. So stills, you know, print slides, audio recordings on a cassette or reel to reel, or even some people had home record makers back in that day. Home movies, 8mm, 16, Super 8, it doesn't matter. And just anything that records a piece of that history that's related to the space race era is of potential interest. And
okay.
I think it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun because it's such an exciting time to be dealing with. And to have this constraint of telling it in the moment makes it really challenging because you can't, you know, I've done a lot of documentaries, but we're always able to kind of back off and default to the voiceover. You know, I don't know what to do here. I'll write some voiceover, and you write it in real time, and you read it, and then, you know, you go get it finished later. Yeah, you can't do that here. You got to cut to something from that time that explains it. So it'll be really neat.
Oh, that's great. Sounds great. And again, it's coolspacenews.com. No, coolspacenews.com.
coolspacenews@gmail.com.
coolspacenews@gmail.com. If you have any of that kind of stuff related to that period during the space program, coolspacenews@gmail.com. Well, congrats, Rod.
Thank you very much for that.
Fun.
Yeah. Hey, well, and you know, working in TV makes enough scratch that I can write a couple of more books for penurious wages.
So. All right. We got a couple more texts. We got a caller here. It's Donald. Go ahead,
sure.
Donald.
Hi. Yeah. This is sort of a follow up on what you were talking about, the space junk. I read a Bourne novel. A recent Bourne novel that basically had somebody using the Kessler effect, where if you detonate a warhead into a certain kind of certain synchronous orbit in the lower level of a certain satellite, you could plot that it's going to hit into this one and this one and start a chain reaction that'll create a barrier that from the lower orbit. You know, they'll keep it from reaching a higher orbit. So it'll disrupt communications and also space flight because of the high velocity attained in the lower orbits.
Yeah. So, did you see Gravity, perchance, the movie?
Did you see Gravity?
No, I didn't.
No, he didn't.
Okay. So that was a big part of that. So even without a deliberate detonated warhead up there, there is a body of theory, this Kessler effect, that people think that even if just another spacecraft goes out of control, if it's big enough, like say the size of the shuttle or a space station, that these impacts could start happening, and this that you get this out of control kind of random kinetic nightmare storm going up there, and it just spreads and spreads and spreads, and you get this out of control chain reaction. It's all theoretical, of course, and how long it would last is anybody's guess. But there is so much stuff up there that apparently it's a very real, at least in terms of the physics of it, a real possibility. And yeah, it could create this kind of barrier that would be very difficult to transit for a while, and that's why people are trying to slow down the proliferation of this stuff, which is why people got very upset last year when India launched that satellite interceptor, that ASAT weapon test. And they said, oh, don't worry, you know, it's a low altitude, all that stuff will come down in a few hours to a few days, and a lot of it's still up there. So these things are hard to predict and control, and, you know, the U.S. and Russia have had more practice at it than anybody else, but even we don't get it right all the time. So the less of that we can have up there, the better.
Oh, okay. All right, Donald, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Donald.
Yeah. Here's a text here from our good friend Doc, who says, I have heard of a rock formation on the surface of Mars that strongly resembles Stonehenge, dubbed Marshenge. There are theories of how this could have occurred naturally, but the arrangement is extremely similar to Stonehenge. What do you know about this?
Not much, although I tracked for years when I was writing my last two Mars books. I tracked those sightings as they came up, because I knew it was going to be part of the conversation. And there's been pictures where they thought they saw Bigfoot, arrowheads, fossils, an artillery piece, of course, famously the face on Mars. And, you know, of course, that conversation usually leads to, okay, NASA's covering something up, right? Because
right.
If we saw it, we can discuss it. Well, and I remember talking to the lead scientist on the Curiosity mission, because I followed him around for about a year working on that book I did called Curiosity. And I said, you know, they just got another Bigfoot sighting on Mars. He smiled. He said, yeah. And I expect him to kind of poo-poo it, because, you know, this guy's a PhD working at Caltech and JPL.
Yeah.
He said, you know what? I love that stuff. And I said, why? And he said, because if we actually have a dinosaur femur moment up there, my budget explodes. It would be 10 times in a week and 100 times a year. So if I find a trilobite or an old Chevy carcass or something up there, my budget just goes through the roof, and I could do incredible science and exploration and probably send people up there. Why wouldn't I want that? I said, yeah, that's a pretty good point. I think some of the spooky stuff is where you see these parts of the landscape where, which may be what he's talking about, where they have kind of a soft, like a clay bed with, you know, more calcified vertical rocks in it or something. And over the millennia, wind or water has worn away the softer stuff. You get these really weird formations left. It's almost like a molding process, right, except in reverse. And you get what they call dragon's teeth, and that's what was tearing up the wheels of the rover for a while. But you get things that look like wrenches and hammers and socks and all kinds of stuff left over from this erosive process, and it's just millions and millions and hundreds of millions of years of wind and water. But, Marshenge is one I'm going to have to check out. That actually sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, no, that I was, you know, when I hadn't heard about that until Doc sent in that text. That sounds kind of cool. I would love to see that if there's something on that look. And then, of course, you know, because it like looks like Stonehenge, you know, again, Rod, of course, you know, we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories a little bit later on. That's ripe for a conspiracy theory.
Well, this looks like a hillock or a hummock, a small hill with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 roughly circular rocks on it. And I'm only seeing it from overhead because, you know, it's a lot better if you can see those things with some relief off to the side. But the best pictures, they look, again, like these rocks that are cemented into the soil after it's been eroded away.
Yeah.
And they got drop shadows and everything. What I don't see is scales. That'd be kind of interesting to check out.
It's cool because considering, you know, like the theories behind Stonehenge being put together by aliens and stuff, it's just going to even further that theory right there. It's like they've stopped at Mars. They've stopped at Earth. They're going to stop at other places and leave their stones behind.
Well, you leave your stones behind. I don't want this. Yeah, and there was something. Oh, it was just the other day. There was a piece, a new paper release saying that Venus, they think Venus may have had a temperate atmosphere that could have supported open bodies of water and stuff. A couple billion years ago, maybe 2 to 3 billion years ago, and that it just got this runaway, you know, warning for here us here on Earth, this runaway greenhouse effect that just destroyed it.
Yeah.
But more and more, there seems to be this body of theory saying, you know, we think there's a chance that advanced civilizations may have popped up throughout the galaxy and beyond a long time ago.
Right.
And just didn't make it. We're kind of late to the party because of the age of our star and all that.
Right.
If that's the case, that starts you worrying a little bit, doesn't it?
Cause yeah.
Like technical civilizations tend to wipe themselves out. Well, that would be unfortunate.
Yeah. All right, Rod, hang on, yeah. Okay?
Okay.
All right, Rod's with us. Rod Pyle is with us, space expert. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got more to talk about, a lot more to talk about with Rod, and we'll do it after the news, which is up after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the WGN Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is Thursday morning, so it's a triple play Thursday, 1 hour, 3 songs. That'll be coming up later on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to be talking about the Brady Bunch, because today marks the debut, the premiere of the Brady Bunch 50 years ago. So we're going to talk about the Brady Bunch and then some of the best and worst TV families. And conspiracy theories, we'll jump into that too on this Thursday morning. And anytime you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Right now, we're continuing our conversation with Rod Pyle, author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and space expert. If you have a space comment or question, it's 312-981-7200. And Rod, welcome back.
Hey.
Hey, so on this date, in 1996, Shannon Lucid returned to Earth. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the importance of that?
Oh, boy. I'm trying to remember. You didn't send me that one.
Oh, I didn't?
You switch-hitted on me.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I know Eileen Collins because she was at the last conference I was at, so I read up on her because she was the first female shuttle commander and did the docking with Mir, and more importantly was just the nicest, most genuine astronaut. I mean, there are a lot of them that are nice, but she was just incredible. But mm-hmm. I'm going to have to.
Okay, well,
let's get back to Shannon Lucid because I got to look her up.
Oh, okay. Well, Shannon Lucid returned back to Earth on this date in 1996. So
from how long was she at?
It said on March 23rd.
Oh, she did 223 days total. She was up there a long time.
Yeah, and it said, but on March 23rd, 1996, Lucid transferred to Mir and from the same space shuttle for a planned 5-month stay.
Okay, she was one of the ones with the that was a big deal because that was our first real bit of space detente with Russia because that was after the Soviet Union fell.
Right.
So she, we'd done the, the Apollo Soyuz thing back in 75, which was docking Apollo capsule, Soyuz capsule, and they shook hands and ate borscht paste and hung out for a couple of days and then came home. But it was kind of a, it was using up Apollo hardware and it was kind of a nice thing. But after having the Skylab space station up and doing the whole lunar exploration thing, it was kind of like if you were, just a sideline observer like I was at the time. It's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
But the shuttle Mir thing was great because it was like the peak of our technology for that time because we hadn't done a modular space station yet with their first modular space station, which, the Soviet Union was really good at making space stations. They weren't as big as Skylab or as the ISS, but they worked pretty well. And if you look at the close-up pictures of them, they were scary primitives, but they worked, and it all worked. And their space capsules worked, the rocket worked. So you're right. Yeah, that was
her. Yeah, she was also the first American woman to live in a space station, according to this that I'm looking at.
And born in Shanghai, China.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Of missionary parents, yeah.
All right.
So, hey, this is my third question flunk for the evening. I think I'm setting a record on your show. I didn't know Mars hands, didn't really know the black hole answer, and now Shannon loses.
Oh, that's all right. Now, you mentioned Amazon and SpaceX. The Space Ace could connect the entire world to the Internet. This is something that you mentioned a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
So, like I said, it's these low-altitude orbits. SpaceX's are about, I think, 380 miles. They deploy lower than that, then they eventually transition them up there. And it's this idea of low-latency, easy-access broadband for the entire planet. So SpaceX is planning to put up between 12,000 and 14,000 in the next couple of years. They've launched, I think, 60 so far. 57 of them are still working. Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos' space company, is planning to do something similar. OneWeb is another company, and there's a bunch of smaller ones. Some of them are specialty operations. But the idea is, of course, they're all proprietary, so once you sign up, it's like cable. You sign up for one company, you're stuck with them. But the idea is that anywhere on the planet you are, you can get broadband if you have a ground station, probably about the size of a large briefcase with a small dish, a couple hundred bucks, might be smaller than that. Over time, certainly it will be. And so, you know, on at one level, it's like, great, you know, we've got fast broadband. It's a much higher rate in terms of speed than we're getting on our cable system or our DSL systems. So that's cool. You do have to have an antenna outside, so there's going to have to be some finagling to do there. But the real excitement, for me anyway, and I was interviewing this billionaire, multi-billionaire named Steve Jurvetson, who invested a bunch of money in SpaceX years ago. It was an incredible interview, and he's this brilliant, passionate, incredibly wealthy guy who invests in this kind of tech. And he was bouncing off the walls. I was talking about this, saying, think of all the potential Einsteins out there. You've got these huge swaths of humanity, billions of people. I think 2.5 or 3 billion people now are not wired in.
Yeah.
Who aren't part of that conversation. How many of them are potential geniuses? How many of them could benefit from more advanced education techniques by not having to trudge 10 miles to the village schoolhouse? But, and, you know, is that going to happen? In some cases, yeah. In some cases, probably not. And as I was saying earlier, you know, when I was in grad school at Stanford studying communication, when the first rollout of the Internet was kind of really getting big, and I remember we were having all these theoretical discussions about, oh, it'll broaden the scope of human conversation. We'll have all these humble intellectual conversations and all that. I was the only guy in the seminar that said, no, capitalism hates a vacuum. It's going to become the playground for Coke, Pepsi, and Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
And these academics looked at me like I was a creature. Well, guess what? Yeah, there's been an expansion of the public sphere a little bit, but most of it's advertising and marketing and capitalism because we're good at it. So that'll be part of it, too. But it is exciting, and it's going to be a big deal. One downside is astronomers complaining on any given night, in a dark sky, you can see between 3,500 and 5,000 stars, depending on, you know, which hemisphere you're looking at and so forth. This is going to have tens of thousands of new stars up there. Some will be dimmer than others, but it's going to make it really hard. I mean, for just a passive sky watcher like me, it's going to be great because there's going to be all these moving fireflies up there. It's kind of neat. But for an astronomer, it's going to be a nightmare because they're going to have to think constantly crossing through their field of vision.
Oh, yeah, wow. Hey, did you ever think back years and years ago that, like Amazon and SpaceX and all these rich guys would be doing what they're doing now? And when it started happening, were you skeptical about it?
No, I was really excited, but I didn't see it coming because I heard of Musk and then later, a little bit later, Bezos talking about it, even though he started earlier, he was very quiet about it. I kind of thought, you know, building rockets is really harder than these guys think. And it was. I mean, it took Musk almost a decade to get anything going that was really working out, which is a long time when you're spending that kind of money.
Yeah.
And Bezos has been even slower. But they've both been, especially SpaceX, his success has been spectacular given where he came from. So, you know, I, like you, probably watched Destination Moon and other movies about, you know, Mr. Industrialist is going to build his rocket.
Right.
And, oh, here comes the military, and they're going to take it over, or the government shows up to help out, or what have you.
Right.
There is a kid thinking, that's silly. Only NASA and the Russians can build rockets, and it's really hard, and it takes 363 feet of Saturn V to launch this little tiny capsule and bring it home and all that. Well, you look at what Musk is doing with Starship, which is going to be way bigger than the Saturn V on its booster,
carrying
80 to 100 people out to the moon and Mars at a time. Looks like it can probably work. if he can figure it out. So, yeah, I'm stunned.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to say that I'm completely godsmacked and kind of sideswiped by it and really happy about that.
Yeah. It's great. It's a fun time to follow this stuff now. It really is, you know.
It is, and I'm so glad that I'm still alive to see it, cuz I really kind of felt let down after the whole Apollo thing was over. And that, you know, the shuttle was cool, the space station's great, but it's not out there.
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's NASA going to the moon and beyond and to Mars or SpaceX or Bezos or China, but as long as somebody does it, there's a part of me, I think our generation has a little bit more nationalism maybe than the current one. Part of me really would like to see the United States pull it off. But
yeah.
You know what? The Chinese are really putting their backs into it, and they may deserve to win. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Another call coming in. Here's Kerry on WGN. Hi, Kerry.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Just a similar question to one of the last callers, and this may be out of your realm, and that's okay. For dummies, and scientifically, I'm not a dummy. I'm a chemist, and I've taken a lot of physics and such, but I kind of didn't pay attention to a lot. But I'm fascinated. In order to really explore the rest of the universe, at least where we live, we're never going to be able, probably based on physics, we're never going to be able to build a vehicle that goes the speed of light. And even if we did, it would take us 1,000 years to get somewhere that we wanted to go. So the only other alternative is like wormholes. For dummies, can you give like a 2-second wormhole explanation and what the theory is? And again, I know that's a little bit out of your expertise, but
yeah, I mean, as I think you're kind of alluding to, it's like a short circuit in space-time, right? So if you imagine space-time is as big as we always saw the classic illustrations in astrophysics classes back in the 1970s.
Yeah.
You think of space-time as a rubber blanket, you fold it over, and there's a hole passing from one part to the other, and that gives you the shortcut through space. There's been so much time. I mean, when I was working on Trek, of course, there are people that would write in and say, you know, is it real? Does it really work? It's like, no, it's a fantasy. Last thing I read about wormholes is, was they can't work because basically you can't transit them as solid matter. But, it beats me. But talking about interstellar travel, I would add a couple things. I'm on the board of an organization called Tau Zero Foundation, and that's what they've been studying for years. And we're just getting ready to step off and start raising a new fund. They've done this a couple times before, of probably non-NASA money to support 8 really breakthrough research groups that we've been looking at. We canvassed a lot of them. And there's some stuff out there that is surprisingly close to working, plasma magnets and things like this. For high energy propulsion, we're not talking about speed of light. We're talking about a fraction of that. But if you're sending a robotic probe out to Proxima Centauri, which is 4.4 light years away, something like that, that is interesting. You know, it's going to take a long time to get there, probably 20 years, and it's going to take a long time for the pictures to get back, and you have to figure out a way to slow it down once you get there, which is hard. But, you know, getting the first images back of an exoplanet is going to be one of those life-defining moments for an awful lot of people.
All right.
That's cool.
Okay,
that's cool.
Thanks, Kerry.
That's great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah, so make sure you live another 30 years so you get to see it. You're a chemist. You know how to figure that out.
Yeah.
And when you do figure it out, let Nick and I know, okay? Because I think we're heading for an early one.
Yeah. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us, and we're going to continue talking a little bit about space here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Blackhawks and Wildcats games online, WGNradio.com.
Townstone Financial is synonymous with great rates, low closing costs, and phenomenal service to the thousands who have completed purchases and refinances with us since 2002. Hi, my name is Barry Sterner, owner of Townstone Financial. Let's hear about the Townstone experience from one of our customers.
I'm Christopher Nowak, a real estate agent with Castline Properties here in Chicago. When a buyer contacts me with questions about the loan process, what type of loan products are available, it's easy for me to put that buyer in touch with Townstone Financial, and specifically Zach Schwartz, Barry Sterner, the whole team over there at Townstone. I have confidence that the team at Townstone is going to make me look good. The result at the end of the experience is that the customer is always happy with the service they receive.
Remember, nobody values your business more than Townstone Financial, and I'm always available to answer your questions. Call me now at 312-896-2110. That's 312-896-2110, or go to townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financial is licensed in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida. NMLS 136639. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Equal housing lender.
The kickoff to savings event is going on now at Muller's Woodfield Acura. Here's Scott Muller, dealer principal of Muller's Woodfield Acura, letting you know why Muller's Woodfield Acura is an easy choice for your next Acura.
Hi, Scott Muller here. We know many of you struggle with the long amount of time it takes you to buy or service your car at a dealership. You won't find that at Muller's Woodfield Acura. With over 150 years of experience, our management team knows how to quickly get you in and out the door with the price you want and the deal that best fits you. It's not just our sales team that can speed things up. With every Acura accelerated service, your vehicle will receive complete service and a multi-point inspection. All this performed in 30 minutes or less by Acura trained technician teams who use only genuine Acura parts and fluids. Get started and finish quickly at Muller's Woodfield Acura. And come see why you will not be disappointed.
Listen up, Chicago area. Are you interested in making active and passive income each month flipping real estate tax liens? Then listen to this. The ProSource Tax Lien Company is offering a free tax lien flip kit, which contains educational videos and a step-by-step report that will show you how to earn government-regulated returns up to 18% that are secured by real estate. Plus, see how you can access tax lien inventory not available to the public. So, if you want to become a real estate investor without swinging a hammer or being a landlord, then text Chicago to 31000 now to get your free tax lien flip kit and get ready to learn how to flip tax liens and acquire houses well below wholesale prices with great profit potential. All from home, working part-time. Text Chicago to 31000 right now to get your free tax lien investor kit, plus two free tickets to a live training event, which includes a free smartwatch just for attending. Text Chicago to 31000. That's Chicago to 31000 for your free tax lien kit now. Individual results may vary.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me round and get to fight.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here above downtown Chicago. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Rod Pyle is with us. He is an author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine. A couple more news stories, space stories to talk about here with Rod. And let's get Rod back on. Rod, welcome back.
Hey.
All right. What is this this story? How important is this story that the Senate bill offers $22.75 billion for NASA in 2020? That's got to be big, right?
Yeah, it's bigger than last year by about $1.2 billion. They were looking for more because they're trying to get this moon program done. So on the one hand, you got the president, the administration saying, okay, back to the moon by 2024. We know we said 2028 before, and now we want 2024. Get with it. Well, we need a rocket. We need to buy one for SpaceX or finish building the SLS, which we've been working on for a better part of a decade. And we need the Orion capsule finished and flown and tested and worked out. And we need to know we can put people in it. But, you know, those things are pretty close to being done. We need a lander, which is really not even started unless you count what Blue Origin has been doing. So that's got to be a fast prototype and build. And we need spacesuits because we haven't built a moon suit since the 1970s. So there's a lot of stuff that's really expensive to do, even with NASA's new routine of outsourcing to private companies and not doing it on this old cost-plus model they used to do with space and defense, but where you would get all these cost overruns and just pay them blindly. Now it's pay for performance. So these are fixed contracts, fixed-price contracts. But even with that, you need enough money to get it going. So the last thing I read, the NASA administrator was not very happy because he said, you know, you're kind of killing us here. You ask us to do this on one hand, then you'll give us enough money on the other. But, you know, I was looking at the way the dollars spin out. And, for instance, in that budget, we know there's at least $2 to $3 billion to continue operating the space station, which is getting old and expensive. So they'd like to start being able to get out of that pretty soon. But there's another $4 billion again for SLS and Orion, and we've been putting billions into this thing every year, like I said, for a better part of a decade, and it's, you know, it's way, way, way behind schedule. So there's a lot of people out there that kind of feel they ought to just give it up and just turn to SpaceX and Blue Origin and say, okay,
here's a tenth that money, make it happen, and they would.
And how do they budget this money? Where's it going to go? Do you know?
Oh, it's split out. You know, each field center gets a certain amount, and JPL gets about a tenth of it, and then the directorates get various. So there's a science directorate and a human spaceflight directorate, and there's the people that do the weather and climate tracking and all that. So it's whittled into all these different areas. And then you've got like $112 million for education, which various parties keep trying to cut out, but the Senate keeps putting back because they feel it's important and NASA's good at it. And one of the things about NASA that's so impressive, if you just look at the history of the organization, is it's the only agency of its kind that I know of that has always taken everything it's learned and gotten and shared it with the public. So if you're a foreign power, like China, for instance, who's making big strides in space, or India, you know, you've got a real leg up by getting all this data from NASA. You've got engineering knowledge. You can see the results of their engine tests. You can see the results of their analysis of how things worked out when the spacecraft was flying, what they were doing up there. So that's a real gift to the world. Sometimes I think maybe a little bit more than the world deserves. But, this money comes back in myriad ways. But, yeah, this budget is an important one, and I wish it was about another billion and a half higher.
Okay. All right. Well, as we talked when you first came on, you did see Brad Pitt's movie Ad Astra. I because of scheduling problems and things that happened over the weekend, I didn't get a chance to see it. But I'm so curious about it. And I also have a piece here about how one opinion piece that says that Ad Astra is one big shiny ad for Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. So I guess in the great tradition of product placement, I guess, early on, Lockheed Martin, the way I read it, offered, said, look, we'll advise you on the film because we know how to build spaceships like that. And they said, okay. The producer said, okay. And then the next thing you know, they're spending an unspecified amount of money to start labeling things. And, you know, Lockheed Martin is doing fine, but they haven't won as big in the space derby as they'd like. And Boeing got the space launch system and the Orion capsule. And, you know, Lockheed would like a piece of some of this action. They pitched this thing called Mars Base Camp, which was going to be a kind of a mini International Space Station that would transit out to Mars and stay in orbit there. That's not going anywhere. They pitched manned Mars landers that aren't happening yet. They're certainly interested in working on the moon landing project. So, you know, they've got to stay in the game. So how do you do that? Well, you get out there in front of the popular audience, say, look at all the cool stuff we do. And one way to do that is to hope that you're on a blockbuster movie with the proper labeling and designs. And people go, oh, I saw that great-looking rocket in that movie Ad Astra.
Right.
I don't know how this is going to do. You know, have you tracked the box office at all?
It's not. It had a disappointing opening, and it's going to drop. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to drop big time. Listen, when a movie version of Downton Abbey makes like $16 million more, that's not real good.
Well, this is just casual evidence, but I was in the theater on a Monday, admittedly, in the afternoon. But it was in a major metropolitan cinema, and I think with me there was an audience of six.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So what did you think?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, you know, so visually it was stunning, as everybody says.
Yeah.
I thought Brad Pitt did an Oscar-level performance of this kind of constrained. It was a little bit like watching Ryan Gosling in First Man, this constrained, emotionally crippled guy. He's on Earth, you know, his marriage isn't going well. We see flashbacks of how his wife is tired of dealing with this cold, removed man. So he's working up on this big antenna that's a SETI project, you know, for contacting aliens. And this pulse comes, and he gets knocked off, and then you have that terrifying descent in the sky. So that's action sequence number one. So we know there's a problem. So the big bad military pulls him in and says, hey, we think this is your dad who disappeared in this deep solar system mission 16 years ago to go out and try and find life on other worlds, because apparently you have to travel to the edge of the solar system to be able to look out into the galaxy, which we know isn't really true. But, you know, their conceit was it's closer to the heliosphere, the boundary between the solar wind and the outside. So if you're closer to it, you get a better view. I don't know. So out he goes. So dad went out and did that, and disappeared. So now we find out, you know, secret military thing. Oh, guess what? Your dad's actually still around, and we think he's gone nuts.
Yeah.
So they want to send Brad out to the moon and then to Mars to contact dad. So he does a moon shuttle, kind of a cool
cool things. Gets to the moon station. It's got a Subway sandwich, and it's got the cowboy from Las Vegas, the hitchhiking sign. So there's some cute stuff there about commercialization, because, right, of course, that's what will happen.
Right.
And then it's time to drive over to the base to take off for Mars, and pirates attack, because they're pirates on the moon. And why wouldn't they? It's never explained why they attack. We still don't know why these pulses are coming and what they have to do with his dad. We never really find out. So long and short of it is, he sneaks his way onto the Mars rocket because he's not supposed to go, because he's been unable to reach dad by radio, which, by the way, he sends a message out and then sits there and waits for a response. It's like, dude, didn't anybody tell you it takes 4.5 hours to get the message out to Neptune and 4.5 hours
right,
to get it back?
Right, right.
But it's the magic of movies, right? And if it's a good movie, you don't care. In this case, you kind of care. So he ends up accidentally killing a bunch of people on the rocket. Oops, sorry about that. Goes out and does not solve his daddy drama when he gets there.
Yeah.
But the visuals out by Neptune make the trip to theater worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I was watching people nod off, and I was getting close myself. And I know a lot of people said they fell asleep in the film.
Yeah.
But if you can make it till that Neptune stuff, it's like seeing 2001: A Space Odyssey over again.
Yeah, well, that's high compliment. What I heard was that visually it's amazing, and that everybody should see it on the largest screen possible. So if you have the option to see it on IMAX or anything like that, that's the way you should see it. So,
yeah. And there's a lot more to say about it, but, you know, I don't want to give away too many things. But,
got it.
You know, basically, it's this kind of introverted, deeply psychological meditation on what love and family means, and his father abandoned him and pushes him away right up till the end.
Yeah.
And so Brad comes home and falls back in love with his wife.
There you go. Okay.
And that's a good thing.
Oh, that is a good thing. By the way, you're working on this documentary, a National Geographic documentary about the right stuff. So if anybody out there has anybody whose family members or you yourself worked during the Mercury and Gemini programs, and if you have any stuff that you would like to participate with, you like audio recordings, photos, home movies, that kind of stuff. Again, shout out the email address they should send it to if they want to be a part of this documentary.
CoolSpaceNews@gmail.com.
CoolSpaceNews
also happens to be the name of my podcast. But yeah, that was the best address to use. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And everybody check out Rod Pyle Books. Rod, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy, take care.
I look forward to it every time.
Rod Pyle's the best. We'll take a break. The news is coming up in 8 seconds. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5, as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude from 1 to 5 a.m. right here on WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday here. 312-981-7200. All right, Tom, who requested the ZZ Top?
That's coming to us from Scott over in Streamwood.
Scott in Streamwood. Okay, kicking off the Triple Play Thursday. All right. Yeah. So, did you watch The Brady Bunch ever?
No, because it was being rerun mainly on TV Land. And when I was growing up, TV Land was super lame. I was not super into what was playing on TV Land. And The Brady Bunch seemed kind of milquetoast to me.
Oh, well, yeah. No, it is. I mean, that's just, it's a generational thing, because I remember when it was on TV, like, first run.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 70s and into the late 70s, when they started syndicating it, it was on here, Channel 32, which is Fox now, Channel 32.
Yeah.
And they would have, like, after school, they would play it. I think it was on at 5 p.m. And I watched it every day, you know, like, right before dinner. I would watch, like, The Brady Bunch. And I don't like it. It's a really stupid show, but I've seen every episode of it because it's like one of those things. It's a cultural touchstone.
Of course.
So, Vic, did you ever watch the Brady Bunch?
Yeah, and you know the one that they did in Hawaii, that special? I still remember that one.
Yeah, that was I think it was a two-parter.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And
one of the few times they actually left that house they were in.
Yeah, well, they also went to you remember the episode, they also went to the Grand Canyon.
No, I don't remember that one.
And they get thrown in a jail. In a ghost town, in a Western ghost town.
What? What?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Remember who the celebrity... Who's the celebrity, you guys out there, 312-981-7200, who's the celebrity who was in that episode? I think it was Jim Backus, who was Mr. Howell on Gilligan's Island, also the voice of Mr. Magoo. I think it was Jim Backus as like an old...
Jim Backus as Zachariah T. Brown.
Right, Zachariah T. Brown. He was a blanking on the guys who go into the rivers and look for gold and they shake the thing.
Like a 49er, a panhandler, not panhandler.
No. What are they called? There's a name for them.
They're in the water.
They've got the strainers and they're shaking and they wear like
prospector.
That's it.
Well, prospectors go out and they're the ones that point in the right direction. They find where they think the goal might be, and then the other 49ers, whatever, go in and try to get it.
Well, he was like an old prospector who they get locked up in a jail. But yeah, that's the Grand Canyon one. Now, the Hawaiian one, Vincent Price is in the Hawaii episode.
Yep, I do remember that.
Yeah, and there was that...
They had
a necklace. They had and it was supposed to have a curse on it. And
it was a little tiki thing.
And whoever was wearing it, you know, something bad almost happened. Like, I think, like, a thing fell off the wall and almost killed, like, one of Bobby or Peter. Greg had it on when he was surfing and he almost died. The surfboard hit him on the head. Peter, if I'm not mistaken, I think Bobby was the one where the thing fell off the wall and almost killed him in the hotel room. But Peter had a tarantula crawl on him.
Yeah.
So that was the...
At my age, it was captivating TV.
That
episode.
I mean, I was a kid, you know, and I watched it, you know, and I watched those episodes. But it was... you guys, I know everybody out there, you know, you don't have to feel guilty about it. I think all of us who are listening of a certain age watch the Brady Bunch. And I know that, you know, maybe we liked it when we were a kid, and in retrospect, we look back and go, geez. But, yeah. So, if you watch the Brady Bunch, do you have any favorite Brady Bunch episodes or favorite Brady Bunch moments? I mean, a lot of them have turned iconic. It's a really stupid show, but it is part of the pop culture. And so many moments on that show have become iconic. Well, now, one of the top-rated shows on HGTV... is with the Brady kids
now fixing up the show
or fixing up the house. Like they're renovating the Brady house. So what they're doing is because the exterior of the Brady house was an actual house outside of Los Angeles. The interior was a set. The interior was all sets. So what they're doing on this show, I'm not seeing it, but it's like the highest rated show on HGTV right now. Like the ratings were through the roof, which goes to tell you just how popular Brady Bunch was and still is. And if anybody's seen that show, I mean, I hear it's actually very entertaining. What they're trying to do is take the house, because the interior of the house looks nothing like the sets they used, that what the house is supposed to look. So they're remodeling it to look exactly like the interior of the Brady Bunch house. So they're taking the exterior of the Brady Bunch house, gutting it out, and making it look exactly, like putting the den at the base of the stairs, having Alice's room right off the kitchen. You got the little back porch area, like the TV room with the screen door. And then you've got like the dining room, which is right by the staircase. And then the couch and a couple of chairs right by the front door, where all that stuff is. And then upstairs, it's only one bathroom, of course. There's six kids in the house and they share a bathroom, which I always thought was weird, especially since Mike was an architect. But anyway, that's what's happening now, and it's a hugely popular show. You know, it's 2019, and this Brady Bunch thing still has a huge following. And if you're going to watch a reality refurbishing show about the Brady Bunch, the numbers are huge. So, but the Brady Bunch debuted on this date, September 26th, 1969. So it's the 50th anniversary of the debut of the Brady Bunch. Here's what they say about it. And on September 26, 1969, American television audiences hear what is soon to be the famous opening lyrics. Here's the story of a lovely lady who was living with three very lovely girls. As the Brady Bunch, a sitcom that will become an icon of American pop culture, airs for the first time. The show was panned by critics. Yes, it was. According to the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and during its entire network run, the series never reached the top 10 ranks of the Nielsen ratings yet. The program stands as one of the most important sitcoms of the American 1970s television programming, spawning numerous other series and all three major networks on all three major networks, as well as records, lunchboxes, a cookbook, and even a stage show and a feature film. Created by Sherwood Schwartz, who also created Gilligan's Island, The Brady Bunch followed the story of Carol, played by Florence Henderson, a widowed mother of three blonde daughters who marries architect Mike Brady, played by Robert Reed, a widower and the father of three brown-haired boys. The blended family lives together in a suburban Los Angeles home with their cheerful housekeeper, Alice, played by Ann B. Davis. The show focused primarily on issues related to the Brady kids, Greg, Barry Williams, Marsha Maureen McCormick, Peter Christopher Knight, Jan, Eve Plum, Bobby, Mike Lookinland, and Cindy, Susan Olson, who ranged from grade school age to teenage. Although set in the late 60s and early 70s, a time of political and social upheaval in the United States, the Brady Bunch generally avoided all controversial topics, instead presenting a wholesome view of family life and tackled subjects such as sibling rivalry, braces, and dating. After 177 episodes, ABC canceled the Brady Bunch, and the last original episode aired August 30th, 1974. However, the show became a massive hit in rerun syndication. The show's various spinoffs have included a 1977 variety program called The Brady Bunch Hour, a 1988 TV movie, The Very Brady Christmas, and then a 1995 big screen parody, The Brady Bunch Movie, with Shelley Long and Gary Cole, and a follow-up called A Very Brady Sequel the next year. And the 2002 TV movie, The Brady Bunch in the White House. In 1992, Barry Williams published a best-selling memoir called Growing Up Brady, I Was a Teenage Greg, which provided a behind-the-scenes look at the show and revealed that life behind the Brady Bunch cameras was less wholesome than it seemed on TV. They not only had, like, the variety hour, they had specials, they had, I mean, they were doing singing and dancing. It was at the height of the, as we've talked about in the past, the insane tackiness of 70s variety shows. And they were right in the midst of it, wearing really terrible 70s costumes and singing hits of the day and doing dance routines and wacky sketches. It's just terrible stuff, like really, really terrible and corny. And one of the things that I find fascinating about it is that Robert Reed hated the show, didn't want to be on it. He hated it and thought the scripts were stupid. He got into clashes and arguments with the directors and Sherwood Schwartz on a constant basis. Like, he's like, I'm a real actor. I'm a trained actor. This is ridiculous. In fact, the very last episode, which is the only episode that I think is funny, Robert Reed read the script and said, it's so stupid, I'm not doing it. So he didn't do that. He's not in that episode. If you watch the very last episode of The Brady Bunch, Robert Reed's not in it. But here's the thing that I find really strange, is that he hated it so much, and yet he's in every one of the insipid variety shows and spinoffs. He's in everything. You know, for the guy who's bitching about how stupid the thing is, everything they did after the sitcom ended was even dumber, and yet Robert Reed participated in all of them.
Well, you know, what's really great is being able to eat and afford your mortgage.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the thing is, then just, you know, I don't know, quit causing troubles on the set. I mean, he was like, you know, just okay, if you're doing this for the check, take the check, man. You know. Now, granted, the kids loved him and loved Florence Henderson because they really did truly treat them like their own kids. Like, he was very fatherly and very protective of the kids, but he just hated the show, and for good reason, because it's a really stupid show. But I just find it really, really insane that he would continue to do all the really bad spinoffs and the variety shows and all that crap.
I didn't know that he was from Highland Park.
Yeah, from Highland Park.
And he's buried in Skokie.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, but he passed away in Pasadena, and he's buried in Skokie.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Brady Bunch. We're going to talk about that because it's the 50th anniversary of the Brady Bunch, and if you would like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Did you watch it? Did you, you know, was it after school, like with me? Did it become iconic? What are your favorite moments? It's a stupid show, but we can talk about that. Did you watch the spinoffs as well? And then we're going to get into the best family TV families of all time. And we want to hear from you on that, too. 312-981-7200.
Do you remember back in 1966? Country Jesus, hillbilly blues, that's where I learned my lid. Up from coast to coast and line to line to every county there. I'm talking about
that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on WGN here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive on Thursday. Triple play Thursday. Yeah, baby, triple play Thursday. So there it is. That's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. We're going to jump into the world of best and worst TV families. What are the most memorable TV families? And the reason why is because today marks the premiere, the 50th anniversary of the first episode of The Brady Bunch, which would go on to become, whether for good reason or bad reason, an iconic show in American history. And we all watched it, even though it was crappy. It still has a following now. They did, here in Chicago, they did the real life Brady Bunch at Annoyance Theater, and it became a huge success, and it got Melanie Hutsell actually cast on Saturday Night Live, because of that. And that also brought more attention to the original series, which from generation to generation, people have watched. Listen, it's inexplainable, but yeah. So anyway, I watched the show. I did. I think it's a stupid show. But there are, of course, obviously classic moments. Famous episodes, and as we've said before the break, it spawned a whole bunch of spinoffs and variety shows and albums and all kinds of stuff. So, and now there's a show on television right now on HGTV, which is one of the top rated shows on cable right now, which stars the real actors who played the Brady kids. They're all grown and older now, and they are supervising or hosting this remodeling show where they take the actual house that was the exterior shot of the Brady Bunch home. And they're gutting the inside, and they're turning the inside into what the sets look like. So they're actually creating a real Brady Bunch home. So that's very popular right now on TV. So the Brady Bunch phenomenon kind of continues right here in 2019. And we got some people calling in at 312-981-7200 if you want to talk or text with us. Here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I have seen one episode of it, and it's amazing. The window in the front was never a window. It was just a piece of board looking like a window. They put in a real window.
Uh-huh.
They put in real steps, like the steps in the living room.
Yeah.
They made them on the same angle. They did one less step because they didn't have the room. And what they did is they extended the house in the back.
Yeah.
So when you look at it from the front, it looks exactly like the house from TV.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're doing everything backwards in the lot, and then they're also going down some for one of the office, his office or whatever it was that they have in order to create it. There's no space. So what they're doing is they're like going down like into a basement.
Yeah.
And like the attic, I guess it was Greg's room or whatever that was in the attic. That's like going into the basement too.
Yeah.
They're digging in and doing these, but it's scary. It really looks like almost, I mean, they've gotten the furniture, you know, patterns on the furniture, the material is a little different, but it really is very close to what it was.
Lots of people are watching it, and everybody, you know what, everybody knows what that house looks like. You know what I mean? Everybody knows what the rooms look like. So it's kind of compelling to watch that they tried to recreate it exactly the way it was. Everybody knows what the kitchen looks like and all that stuff. So yeah, I can see how that could be entertaining. Tony, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Thank you, Tony. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Another great show. Starting with The Simpsons, of course, listening last night with the Beatles. So all great stuff, Nick.
Thank you.
I was in junior high, ending junior high, beginning high school at that time. And it was more relatable, whether with Greg, you know, liking a certain girl, or Marcia liking the football captain and stuff. And it was just innocent stuff. I'm 61 now.
Yeah.
And I can look back at it and say, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, it is tacky, I guess, but it was just innocent. I enjoyed it, and it's just part of my youth, and I thought it's great. People got knocked out, but they also knocked Gilligan's Island, which you mentioned, Sherwood Shores.
Which, of course,
and it's still running.
Yeah,
you know?
It's still running, absolutely. And they made a movie out of that, and there's all kinds of other stuff that went into that became a musical, all kinds of stuff. Mark, thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it.
Always great listening to you.
Okay, man. Thank you. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because Sherwood Schwartz had a tendency to have these shows where the theme song explained everything about the plot. Because everything about the plot for Gilligan's Island is explained. They got a 3-hour tour, and, you know, they explain what happens, how they end up on the island. Brady Bunch sets it all up. Oh, look, there's this guy. He's got 3 sons. There's this woman. She's got 3 daughters. They end up married, you know.
And that's all you need to know.
Yeah, that's it. 312 area code says, in the late 70s and early 80s, we were usually stuck watching some crappy shows. I was out running the streets most of the time anyway. Yeah, me too. But I still watch the Brady Bunch and a lot of that stuff. 608 area code says, yes, Jim Backus in the Grand Canyon episode and Vincent Price in the Hawaii episodes. He was obsessed with the statue named Oliver, who he talked to.
Wow, okay.
608 area code says, while they are all bad, I've seen them all 200 times. I'm the same way. The strangest was the final episode where Greg's hair turns orange and Robert Reed is not in it. That's what I said earlier. That's the only episode I legitimately laughed at. My favorite is the Don't Play Ball in the House where they break the vase. See, again, everybody knows that, even if you don't watch the show. Mom said, don't play ball in the house. And then they glue the vase together, and they're eating dinner, and water starts shooting out of the vase because they're all cracks. And the kids don't pay it. You know, like everybody, the adults are at the table looking at it going, why is there water shooting out of the vase? And the kids are not acknowledging it. They're just heads down eating it. But, you know, the whole like, oh, no, my nose, when Marcia gets hit in the face, you know, with the football. Joan Namath was on the show. Davy Jones was on the show. It had the show where, like, Greg was caught with cigarettes.
Oh, they tackled that one?
Oh, yeah. Greg was caught with cigarettes.
Did they do the, I'm going to make you smoke the whole pack?
No, it wasn't that. It was like they were disappointed in him. And he was like, there was an anti-smoking rally or something that he was a part of, and yet they found it. And it wasn't his coat. What happens was the coats were switched, and he ended up with a buddy of his who was smoking. Like, maybe he stuck the mm-hmm. I don't remember the details, but there were cigarettes in Greg's, you know, all the kids had issues. Marcia had the broken nose.
Yeah.
Jan was the middle kid. Marcia. She was always pissed off that Marcia was getting all the attention. Cindy lisped. So there was an episode about lisping.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby, Bobby was short and was trying to stretch himself. there was that issue. All the kids had at least 4 or 5, you know, that, Peter, he went through puberty, his voice was breaking, and they were recording music for an album that they were going to give to their parents.
Okay.
And so they were recording, and his voice was cracking, so they wrote a song, It's Time to Change. Greg had many issues, besides, you know, and he also, the one where his hair turned orange, I'll give you the details on that one.
Not to harp on the smoking thing, but, you know, it's 1969. You're telling me that Mr. Brady doesn't smoke?
Nobody smoked.
Nobody smoked. There were no smoking.
I mean, well, this is that episode with the smoking was probably like 72, 73, because he was a little bit older at that time. But yeah. Anyway, but those are just some of the episodes. I'm literally not even scratching the surface for all of the episodes that people know about. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay, the news is coming up after this. Yeah, man. ZZ Top, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran and the gang at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. Today, September 26th, 2019, marks the 50th anniversary of the very first episode, the premiere of The Brady Bunch. And I think we can all agree that it's a pretty corny, pretty stupid, pretty dumb show. But there's no denying the impact that it made and has made and remains in pop culture. And it took off when it was syndicated in and was shown in reruns. And then, you know, you've got your spinoffs and your variety shows and your albums and your cartoons and all kinds of crazy stuff. So the impact that the Brady Bunch made is pretty significant in the world of American pop culture. I watched it all the time. It's a stupid show. I knew even when I was younger that it was stupid, but I still watched it. It's one of those things where, you know, back when I was younger, there were only three channels and two UHF channels, and you just would watch the same stuff. But it has become iconic, and it continues to be iconic. There's a new HGTV show where the Brady Bunch kids, obviously now they're not kids anymore, they're adults, and they are hosting this show where they're taking the house that was actually used, the real house that was used for the exterior shots of the Brady Bunch home on the show, on the TV show. And the interior was not at all like what they were living in. That was all sets. And they're recreating from the sets actual functioning rooms and house inside that house. And the ratings are kind of through the roof for it right now. 301 area code says, I wasn't a Brady Bunch viewer, but my wife and I are watching that HGTV show. It's a heck of a lot of work trying to recreate the set as an actual functioning house. And they are incredibly intent on capturing even the smallest detail. So we're talking Brady Bunch, and then we're going to jump into what are some of the more memorable, maybe some of the best, some of the worst TV families of all time. Because the Bradys are a legendary TV family. Absolutely legendary. Everybody, even if you didn't watch the show, knows who the Bradys are. So that's what we're going to jump into. Some legendary TV families. 312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's happening there?
Hey.
Hey, Bobby, don't use that word stinker.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, but one of my favorite episodes was when Greg was Johnny Bravo.
Yeah.
Because he only fit the jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny Bravo. Whenever they did it was always hilarious whenever they did like musical episodes. Whenever, you know, they tried to be like like musicians or all that stuff. Like when they were the name of the band? Not the Silver. Were they the Silver Platters? No.
That was the one where they were trying to get the money up
for the anniversary gift. Yeah, for the anniversary gift.
Silver Platters.
Right.
But they had another name of the band, too.
Yeah. There were three or four music episodes, even more than the Johnny Bravo episode. The Johnny Bravo episode is hilarious. It's completely ridiculous.
I'm trying to think of the character that when the codes got switched, because he was on a couple other television programs after that.
Who got switched?
Remember when the jackets got switched, where the smoking
episode? Yeah. I don't know. Oh, yeah. No, who was that? That's a good... You know what? It was one of those recognizable guys who appeared on television all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. But
I think he was on a Police Story a couple of times also.
Yeah. And we'll have to find out. Maybe somebody knows. Who knows? All right, Mike, thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.
Take care. There you go. Yeah. God, it's just ridiculous. I remember there was an episode where they... The boys did an elaborate trick to scare the girls, so they set up like some ghost sound effects, like some sound effects, and they put a sheet outside their bedroom window and then shined a flashlight on it and had it on a laundry cord and just threw it across, and it scared the hell out of the girls. They thought it was haunted, and then I think the girls tried to retaliate. And it was, and then something happened. Like, you know, they broke something that was valuable to Florence Henderson, and it was like, you didn't learn your lesson. And there was always a lesson. Mike always at the very end of the show, Robert Reed, Mike Brady would tell the kids what lesson they needed to learn from what they just did. There was that, and I'm trying to think of some of the other the you know, like as I mentioned, some of the celebrities who showed up on it. I remember Davy Jones was on it. Joe Namath was on it. Don Drysdale, I believe Don Drysdale, baseball player, was on it. So they had a lot of big celebrities show up on this thing. But how about the one? Do you remember the one where Marsha, where Greg was like, girls don't know how to drive, and so they set up this obstacle course in a big parking lot. Because Greg was making fun of Marsha, saying that girls don't know how to drive, and Marsha was mad at Greg because Greg was being a jerk about how boys are much better drivers than girls, and girls shouldn't be behind the wheel. And so, you know, they come up with this idea. I think it was Mike's idea. I think it was Robert Reed's idea. to set up this obstacle course and have them drive through it and see who actually was the better driver. And so, of course, you know, Greg is like, I'm the better driver. Girls can't drive. And Marcia was all upset. So what they did was they get in this thing and they each do the obstacle course. And here's the ending of the obstacle course was they had to stop as close to a pylon or a cone that had an egg on top of it. They rested an egg, the hole at the top of the pylons of cones. So they rested an egg on top of it, a raw egg on top of it. And it was who can stop closest to the pylon without hitting it. And, you know, that was, I remember that being the end of it. They had to do, you know, 2-point turns and they had to drive, through curves and all kinds of stuff. And they were outside like with stopwatches. The whole family was out watching them. And I remember Greg was so nervous because Marcia went first, drove the obstacle course first. And she did really, really well. So Greg was really getting nervous because it was so close. And so as he's pulling up to the final place where you're supposed to stop, right in front of the bumper would be the cone with the egg on top of it. I remember he's so nervous that he slips off the brake and guns it and smashes the cone and the egg splatters all over the ground. And then it was like, you know, Mike goes, well, I hope you've learned your lesson, Greg. Everybody can be a good driver. So that was one of those classic moments with where Greg slams into the pylon and the egg smashes on the ground, proving thusly that women can drive just as well as men, if not better. That's the lesson that we learned today, Mike Brady. See, 815 area code says, poor Florence Henderson caught crabs cheating on her first husband with a politician. Okay. She's also in Shakes the Clown, in a fantastic cameo at the beginning of Shakes the Clown. 847 area code, Gary Cole did such a convincing job as Mike Brady in the movies. It was hilarious. Gary Cole was brilliant in those movies. Actually, everybody was good. Shelley Long was good. The kids that they hired to play the Brady kids were good too. But Gary Cole was brilliant in that movie, in both of them. Here's Joe on WGN. Hey, Joe.
Yeah. Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man. What's up?
Hey, there's in conjunction with what you're just talking about with the competition with Greg and Marcia doing the drive test,
yeah,
the driving test with the egg. There's a show on Motor Trend TV and on Discovery. It's called Fast and Loud with Richard Rawlings. It's a, kind of a car show.
Sure.
But anyway, they recreated the 69 Plymouth wagon with Barry Williams on the show. And he was kind of directing them to how to build the car.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually tying in with the HGTV series with them renovating the house. And they build a car, they put their spin on it, they make kind of a hot rod out of it. But
yeah,
they actually drive up to the house at the end of the episode with the six kids, and the kids look at the car. And then they go to the house, and they walk to the front door, and that's the end of the episode because they don't want to show the house. But
right,
it's tied in with that because it's in the Discovery network of TV networks.
Yeah. So did they, so they recreated the 69 wagon, but did they recreate the egg on the pylon?
They did egg on the pylon. It was Barry Williams and Richard Rawlings, and they drove the car together. And Barry Williams actually cheated. They actually super glued the egg on the top of the pylon, so he beat Richard Rawlings.
That is really funny.
A very funny episode, and they were showing flashbacks to some of the episodes in that. It was kind of a nice episode.
Yeah, that's great, man. So, I appreciate the call.
You can probably catch some reruns.
I will. I'll check it out. Thank you, Joe.
Okay.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
He super glued the egg to the top of the pylon. That's funny. All right. We're talking about the Brady Bunch because today marks the 50th anniversary of the very first episode of the Brady Bunch. And we're also going to jump into the best TV families of all time. Beloved, or even if you hate them, do you hate some TV families? We'll get into that, too. We got a break here for some weather, and then we'll come back and jump right back into it. Oh, you see, I love it when the police are requested on Triple Play Thursday, because then you get to hear three police songs. And that's a great one. Walking on the Moon, one of my favorites. Who requested the Police?
That's coming to us from the 630.
Good choice. Yeah! 312-981-7200. God, I love the Police. My favorite band, the Police dominated my high school years. The Police were active from 1979 to 1983, and those are the years I was in high school. Oh, man, I love that band.
It's too bad that, like, Ice Cube and Dr. Dre didn't like him that much.
No.
Not big fans, those guys. Right.
Yeah, hold on a second. Yeah. All right. Hey. Coming up, more comedy stylings of Tom Hush. Appearing at Knuckleheads in Minnesota. By the way, that was the name of an actual comedy club.
It was Knuckleheads?
Yeah, inside the Mall of America, which is the most terrifying place that I've ever been. Have you ever been to the Mall of America?
No, I've been asked if I want to go, but I've never actually gone. But
it's,
I thought
it's terrifying.
Really?
I have an issue with malls. Let me just say this: coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I have an issue with malls. I'm not a mall guy. I get a little anxiety when I go into malls. I don't like to shop. I don't like to spend time. If I need to go out and buy something, I know exactly what I'm going to buy. I walk in, I walk out, I'm gone.
Thank you. Yes.
So whenever I spend, you know, a significant amount of time in a mall, I go, I got to get out of here. I have to get out of here. As you probably know, the Mall of America is the biggest mall in the world. It's massive. There's an amusement park and a roller coaster in the middle of the place. So my first wife and I went to Minnesota because her brother lived there. And we went to visit him, and he didn't live very far from the Mall of America. And they're like, oh, you should go to the Mall of America. So we went to the Mall of America, and we're walking around, and it was just so vast. And just so, it was just, it overwhelmed me. It just, I started freaking out. I'm like, I can't deal. You know, I don't care how many Orange Juliuses are in this place. I can't. So we're walking around in the mall, and you know, and I was like, we have to do something. I can't just walk, you know, in this mall anymore. I can't do it. And of course, it brings up for me, it brought up memories of the original Dawn of the Dead, and I'm just like, I can't. So we end up because I'm like kind of freaking out. So we end up going to Planet Hollywood. There was a Planet Hollywood in there. And at that time, my first wife and I were both smokers. And so that was the only place you could smoke. Because I really, like, when, you know, like at that time, I started craving a cigarette. I'm in the middle of this terrifying mall that's bigger than anything I've ever been in before. And I start to immediately go, I need a cigarette right now. So we go into Planet Hollywood and we start drinking and we're smoking. And then we go, let's go see a movie. Because there's a movie theater, of course, right around the corner. And across from the movie theater was the nightclub, the comedy club, and it was called Knuckleheads. And the logo was like a fist with a face laughing. I'm not kidding. It was inside. And you know what? Patty Vasquez played Knuckleheads, so she can attest to the fact that it actually exists. So I don't know if it exists now, because this was a long time. This was just like 20 something years ago. So anyway, we're like, okay. Because, and also where we were parked, the Planet Hollywood was all the way around the other end of where we parked. So we had to walk through the mall one more time before we got out of there. And I was like, let's go to a movie before, let's just go see a movie. And here's the movie we saw. Inside the Mall of America, the terrifying Mall of America, after freaking out, we saw Seven.
So let me get this straight. You went into a mall. You ostensibly had a panic attack. I got to calm down. Let's go to the Planet Hollywood.
Which is a place that, you know, I mean,
it's the least calm place I've ever been.
No.
But they've got a smoking section.
They have at the bar, you could smoke.
You can smoke at the bar.
Right.
After that, you know, you see this giant fist with a mouth and eyes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And laughing. Like the
laughing. Mouth, yeah. Okay. So you see that nightmarish
thing. And I'm looking forward to the very long walk through the mall to get back to our car.
Yes. So you decide, I got to be somewhere familiar. Movie theater. Okay, Seven. This should be good.
And we saw Seven.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Did you? I feel like you would have had a, anybody would have had a heart attack after that.
No, it's great. Let me just explain. And also, when we got out of the movie, the mall was pretty much closed. So we had to walk all the way through the biggest mall in the world. Because you know that the movie theaters stay late. They open, and then the shops close down. So all the chains were down, you know, the chain fences, they were all down. We're walking through. It's barely lit. We can't stop for an Orange Julius. We just got it. The roller coaster's not running. And then we walked all the way to the car and went back, and we were staying at a hotel, and we just immediately. And I want to say this. That was also the weekend that my because at that time, my first ex-wife was a vegetarian.
Oh.
And that was it was the next morning when I ordered breakfast. Maybe it has something to do with the night that we had just spent. The next morning, I ordered room service breakfast, and she was a vegetarian at that time, and I wasn't. I'm not going to be a vegetarian just because I'm married to someone or dating someone. I was dating her at the time. We weren't married. And so I ordered breakfast and a ton of bacon, and then she just, like, she was sitting there watching me eat the bacon, and obviously, you know, when you take that silver lid off of the plate, the smell just wafts up into the room, and even if you're, and she wasn't always a vegetarian, obviously. And so the smell of bacon was enough. That was it. And so she started downing bacon, and then she got sick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because if you don't
have... She's a vegetarian, yeah.
You don't have that. And I will say, it is no longer Chuckleheads, or Knuckleheads.
Knuckleheads.
It is no longer Knuckleheads. It is now Rick Bronson's House of Comedy. Is Rick Bronson someone I'm supposed to know?
I don't know who Rick Bronson is.
I tried to look up who this dude is.
Charles Bronson's brother? I don't know.
The only thing I've got is an IMDb page. Rick Bronson is an award-winning comedian, magician, TV host, writer, producer, musician, and taxidermist.
See, that's creepy enough to justify him being inside the Mall of America, him running... So that was my experience in the Mall of America.
Wow.
And I wouldn't wish it upon anyone.
The most nerve-wracking.
Yeah. The best thing about it was Seven. That was the best thing about it, but not the most appropriate mood to be in to watch that movie. All right. Real quickly, let me fly through the rest of these texts before we hit the news, and then we're going to jump into the best and worst and most memorable TV families of all time. 312-981-7200. The best line from the Brady Bunch movie was, "Hey, Doug, doesn't Marsha's broken nose bother you?" And he replies, "That's not the part I'm after." Hello. Oh, no, they weren't subtle. Have you seen the Brady Bunch movies?
No.
They're really funny. I'm not kidding. They're really funny. And they really, they go for everything that was ever, there was any kind of innuendo about, like, in fact, about Robert Reed's sexuality. That's confronted in the movie. They make all kinds of jokes. I mean.
They just go for it.
Yeah. 773 area codes. The cigarettes were in the coat of the son of the woman who was leading the anti-smoking rally. That's right. So she was definitely disappointed in her son. 815 area code just says Bubba Smith. Yes, because Bubba Smith was on an episode. Brady Bunch. All right, so that brings us 50th anniversary. By the way, congratulations. 50th anniversary.
Good job, everyone.
Nice job. It's as popular now as it was then. And it's, you know, HGTV. Making tons of money off of a 50-year-old show.
Hand over fist.
Oh, good for them. So that brings us to some of your favorite, most memorable, and maybe if you hate them, TV families of all time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk or text. We do want to hear from you. We are going to break here for news. And then when we come back, we'll jump right into the topic of most memorable TV families of all time. Sitcom families, whatever, any kind. I do have an article here that specifies sitcom families. So we'll go through some of the sitcom families. But any family located on television is what we're talking about. So 312-981-7200. Okay, news is after this. Good choices. Who, Tom? I'm sorry. Who again requested this?
It's coming to us from the 630
630 area.
So we don't have a name, but
all right. Well, you got good taste. and you're doing a couple of deep cuts here.
Solid cuts.
Man. Police, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So we were just talking about, by the way, before we get back to the topic, which is TV families, I just wanted to mention a couple quick things. I did not know that Cranky Anchors, I knew it was coming back, but I did not know that it premiered last night. Brand new. New cat. I mean, they're bringing back, you know, a ton of the people. Florentine's going to be back. Kimmel, you know, Carolla, Sarah Silverman, all the people that were back. But they're bringing in new people and guest stars. I love Crank Anchors. I don't care if it makes me sound like I'm stupid or a nine-year-old. I think Crank Anchors is hilarious.
I really hope that Carolla does Bertram. I love Bertram.
Yeah, so do I. I love Bertram, too. I mean, I love Special Ed. You know,
I got mail.
I love Crank Anchors, and had I known that it was on, I would have set my DVR to, you know, I'm gonna set it now because it's on Wednesdays at 9:30 on Comedy Central, but I would have been able to watch it like immediately when I got home. But Crank Anchors just destroys me. I bought the CD when it came out, when the show was on, and I'm so glad it's back. Also, I just wanted to mention an entertainment thing that Chris Redd and my second future ex-wife Heidi Gardner are no longer featured players on Saturday night at the premiere. They will be regular players, no longer featured, and deservedly so, because they're both great. They're both really, really great, and especially Heidi Gardner. I'm so excited. You know, Saturday night's going to be a fun night for me because I like to sit at home and watch TV. At 7 o'clock, Sven is showing the 1931 Dracula with Bela Lugosi.
Oh yeah.
Please. I've only seen it a few times.
I mean, it's killing me, though, because I won't be... Or maybe I'll be able to catch it before I go see In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh yeah, you're doing In the Mouth of Madness at midnight.
That's not. Yeah, that's midnight.
Yeah, it's at midnight. So, you'll be able to watch it.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely
at nine.
Be able to watch.
It'll be over
done
nine.
At 9. Head on over to the box.
And then at 9, NBC Now is coming, because the regular season of Saturday Night Live is starting. Now they are doing what they normally do on Saturday nights. Show a rerun of Saturday Night Live at 9. So, Sven, Saturday Night Live rerun, probably the news or something. Saturday Night Live comes back. Woody Harrelson is the guest, is the host. So, there you go. That's a solid few hours of TV right there. All right. Anyway, those are a couple of entertainment things I just wanted to throw at you guys. But now we're getting back to the conversation here, which is TV families. 312-981-7200. And this is inspired by the fact that today marks the 50th anniversary of the debut of the Brady Bunch. Got a bunch of texts coming in. Everybody hang on the line. We'll get to you guys. 312-981-7200. 847 area code says, best TV family by far is the Bundys. I love the Bundys. Married with Children. The kids were so much more realistic in how they kept making fun of each other. But when an outsider tried to make fun of them, they would protect each other. I love that show. I think everybody on that show is great, particularly Ed O'Neill. I love Ed O'Neill on that show. 816 area code says, Siskel and Ebert used to say, you have to believe what is happening and care about the characters and what's happening to them, which is why we loved Roseanne and the Connors, except after they won the lottery. I can't believe that they actually went that route. I mean, I don't know whose idea it was to have them win a lottery, but that's completely counter, absolutely the opposite of what that show was about. We love the adults. Like, when they found some pot, they smoked some, thought it was the kids, and figured out it was their own. The situations with the kids were always believable, like when the DJ didn't want to kiss the black girl in the school play, or when he didn't want to do a report in front of a class when he was having erections. And remember, at the end of the episode, Roseanne is the with network censor going over all the euphemisms for erections and you weren't supposed to say. I loved Roseanne in the first run and the reruns. Yeah, groundbreaking show, and at its height, it was great. But it fell. Oh man, it fell. I didn't even watch the reboot. Didn't watch the reboot at all. 301 area code says most TV families are, of course, ridiculous and unrealistic. But I always like the Cunninghams on Happy Days. My kids were obsessed with Full House and Boy Meets World among those shows about families. 815 area code says, iconic family, Little House on the Prairie, Charles Ingalls, the wonderful Michael Landon. That show was so huge. A15 area code, the best TV families because they felt like they were most like mine were The Middle and Malcolm in the Middle. Both of which were classics. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I was telling the guy that answers the phone.
That's Tom.
Once worked at a television station where Spike Odell worked, and they took off children's program in the afternoon and ran the Brady Bunch to fill in before the news.
Mm-hmm.
I used to like the Waltons, which ran on WGN.
Yeah, the Waltons, they were really popular. It was a CBS show first run, it was a real popular show, the Waltons with John Boy and everybody. Ran a long time. Ran a real long time.
Ran nine seasons.
Yeah.
I think it probably was more popular in syndication than it was when it ran first run.
Yeah.
Because actually they thought it wasn't going to catch on. It was running against Flip Wilson, and CBS had canceled a lot of the country programming
right.
they had on prior to that, like Green Acres, Petticoat Junction, the Beverly Hillbillies.
Right. Yeah. That's when they had. That's when CBS. They would jokingly call CBS the country broadcasting station.
That's right.
When they had that whole block of shows that were all very popular at the time. So.
Yeah. Well, the focus of the Waltons changed as the series went on. It became more of a drama, and as the first season mostly centered around John Boy and his growing up and
right.
trying to go graduate from high school and go to college.
Right.
And later, the later episodes dealt with the other members of the family.
Got it. All right, John. Thanks.
Okay.
Take
goodbye,
care.
Nick.
Bye. So here's what we got here. I got some from yardbarker.com. They put together some of their favorite TV sitcom families. And we're not just restricting this to sitcoms, just families in general. They say the Andersons on Father Knows Best. What actually began as a radio series, Father Knows Best, and the Andersons were as wholesome a family could get. But Robert Young portrayed patriarch Jim Anderson as more mild-mannered and generally thoughtful compared to the ruling the roost father figure from the radio show. Then another mention here for the Hex from The Middle. You know who I love on that show? Who I absolutely love on The Middle, is Eden Scherr. I think Eden Scherr as Sue Heck is fantastic. I think she's fantastic. I think she's really funny and really adorable. Where is she now? What is she doing now? Does anybody know? I don't know. Wait, does anybody know where Eden Scherr is now?
Eden Scherr?
She played Sue Heck on The Middle. She played the daughter on the Middle. And I think I thought she was great. I thought she was adorable and really funny. And I don't know if she's doing anything, but Eden Scherr, Sher.
Looking under IMDb, she's appeared in a few episodes of Jane the Virgin. She's been providing the voice on a Disney show here, Star in the Forces of Evil.
Okay.
So she's out there working.
Yeah, I thought she was my favorite part of that show. I loved her character. I loved Sue Heck. I loved her, and I thought she was really adorable. And it was funny, as the show went on, she grew up pretty quick. And I remember, seeing her on the show. She's got the braces and the goofy, she would do the goofy faces and she was really, really funny on the show. And then I saw her all dolled up at like an award show and I was like, whoa. I mean, have you ever seen her not be Sue Heck? Have you ever seen her like all dolled up?
Yep. Yep.
Oh my God. But she's brilliant on The Middle, and that's a very funny show, and a very funny family represented on that show. So, okay, you want to jump in? It's 312-981-7200. By the way, before the 5 o'clock news, right after the 4:45 break, we will run the first Blackhawks Express of the season. It's a preseason game, but we're going to run it. The morning following every Blackhawks game, we run the Blackhawks Express all the way through preseason, regular season, and postseason. And yes, there will be a postseason this year. We sometimes have to regrettably run Blackhawks Express, and this will be one of those mornings where it won't be a pleasant experience but we do it. We run the Blackhawks Express regularly after the game, the morning after each game. But last night's game, wow. Anyway, you'll hear the Express coming up in a little bit. And if you want to jump in, Families on TV, 312-981-7200. This is what would play, well, after this album came out, this is what would play whenever the Police came out on stage. Voices in My Head would always play as they came. That was what their entrance was.
It's awesome.
It's such a great song.
Zenyatta Mundatta.
Yeah, terrific album. All of them are good. All the Police albums are good. All of them. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And, yeah, Triple A Thursday again. 312-981-7200. We're back. And, we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive on this Thursday morning. We have been talking about the TV families because this is the 50th anniversary of the premiere of the Brady Bunch, and we went through some of the ridiculousness that goes along with that show, yet it's a pop culture phenomenon and has been for 50 years. So now we're just talking about your favorite TV families in general. 708 area code says the Barones from Everybody Loves Raymond were the best for me. My parents are Frank and Marie. I grew up with our extended family living right next door to us. Wow, that's exactly the setup right there.
My Everybody Loves Raymond was must watch television in my house.
Was it?
Yeah, my dad loved Ray's parents so much.
Well, they're great. They're the best part of the show. Peter Boyle and why am I blanking on her name? Doris Roberts.
Yeah. He loved Peter Boyle so much.
Peter Boyle was hilarious on it. They were both great. Actually, everybody on that show was good.
It's a fantastic sitcom.
It is. It's good. It's good. Brad Garrett, very funny, and the whole rivalry between the two of them was mm-hmm. really nice. I don't have a brother or anything, but I liked it. That's another one of those shows that I never really watched when it was in first run. Mm-hmm. When I caught it a few times on syndication, I'm like, "Oh, this is pretty funny." Because, yeah, I mean, but Ray Romano, who I was never a huge fan of, I thought his stand-up was okay.
Right.
He was very funny on the SNL that he hosted when the best was one of the best sketches ever was when he was the new guy on SportsCenter and was trying to come up with his own catchphrases, and him and Tim Meadows were doing SportsCenter, and he's like, "Sweet, sassy, molassy." I remember that sketch being so unbelievably funny, and he was funny on it, but I was never a big fan. But now I love Ray Romano. When he started doing I thought he was always the weakest part of Everybody Loves Raymond because mm-hmm. he's just kind of doing like Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld's the weakest part of Seinfeld.
He's like, "Deborah."
Yeah. but I always thought, you know, like, okay, he's just doing the stand-up stuff that he wrote. That's all. But then, like, Men of a Certain Age came out, which was a show that he co-created. It was he, Andre Brower, and Scott Bakula. Did you ever see Men of a Certain Age?
Oh, yeah.
A great show.
TNT?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to watch it.
A great show. And you know what? When I was watching that show, I was of that certain age. And so I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, man, this show's speaking to me. And I thought it was great. And then he kept going. The serious stuff that he's been doing, in Vinyl, he was fantastic. I mean, in Vinyl, he was great. The show wasn't very great, but he was great in it.
He's in Get Shorty.
Get Shorty's great on Get Shorty.
Well, he's going to be in The Irishman.
Yeah.
The Big Sick, he's incredible. Great.
Both he and Holly Hunter, unbelievable.
An amazing pairing.
Yeah.
He's in a Netflix movie called Paddleton.
Yeah.
That was really pretty interesting. I thought he did a very good job in. So
I think he's great. Romano is great.
I love the latter half of his career.
No question about it.
It's awesome.
No question about it. And for me, it all started with Men of a Certain Age. I just was, you know, and my main reason for watching that show, I was like, okay, well, this could be good. But Andre Brower's in it. And I'll watch anything with Andre Brower. Andre Brower since Homicide. I mean, come on. Andre Brower on Homicide, one of the legendary performances, you know, in a TV drama ever.
So, and now on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. I mean, oh, so my funny. God, is he funny. All right, here's Lake Geneva Dan. Guy, Dan.
Yeah, Nick, the family of Soap. Well, young Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
And all the characters, I never missed an episode.
There were two families, because it was about two families. The Tates and, what was the name of the other? It was the Tates and somebody else. And it was about those two families. And I remember when Soap came out, it was real controversial. It had like a parental discretion warning at the front, and it dealt with stuff that nobody ever dealt with. Like, in fact, Billy Crystal was the first gay character in primetime television, on regular primetime television.
Mm-hmm.
And, so Tates and what?
Tates and Campbell's.
Campbell's, right. Okay, Tates and Campbell's.
Yeah.
This
is the story of two sisters.
It was so funny. The show was so funny and really edgy and really groundbreaking, and lots of great performances on it. My favorite performance on that show was Bert, played by Richard Mulligan, the great Richard Mulligan. The whole time when he thought he was invisible, I just remember falling out of my chair laughing. Dan, thanks for the call. Yes, yeah, Soap. Both very, very memorable and crazy. Crazy characters. How about the Huxtables? Cosby Show, very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
But there, I'll tell you something. You know, when that show was on in the 80s, it dominated.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody watched the Cosby Show in the 80s.
And despite everything now, which is all horrible.
Horrible.
It's horrible, horrible, horrible. But the Cosby Show, it showed a middle upper class black family.
Oh yeah,
for the first time.
Absolutely,
and it broke such a mold.
Absolutely, no question about it. It's really, it's really completely and utterly unforgivable and horrifying what Bill Cosby did, and also because I grew up with that guy. I mean, his stand up comedy. I had all of Bill Cosby's albums. I had them all, and I loved them. I loved them. And I just can't believe he's that guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But he is that guy. So screw him. Screw him. How about the Munsters? You got to love the Munsters. You got to love the Munsters. Herman, Fred Gwynn, Lily, Yvonne DiCarlo, Grandpa, Al Lewis. And then the kids, it was nominated for Best Golden Globe for Best Television Series in 1965. And it just got even more popular in syndication. And, of course, you have the Addams Family. I prefer the Munsters over the Addams Family, and I think that's because I'm not as clever as I'm not a very clever man. So I go for the and jumping up and down with the ceiling falling on the head over the kind of subtle sort of, the Charles Addams kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that animated movie looks pretty good, though. I got to say, the animation looks pretty funny. There's a new Addams Family movie coming out, and it looks pretty cool. I'm a fan of the original series, of course. I mean, the Addams Family. I love it. I love John Astin on it, especially as Gomez. It's a great show, and I love it. But I'm a Munsters guy. I'm definitely a Munsters guy. I don't know. I love that show. I especially love Fred Gwynn on it. Fred Gwynn, one of my favorite performers ever.
I still can't. Sometimes I can't get over the fact that he was Herman Munster and then also the guy in Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Sometimes dad is better.
And the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, yeah. He was in Car 54.
He was brilliant. Fred Gwynn was brilliant and so good. Like, the only good thing in Pet Sematary, and not just a good thing, a great thing. He's great in that movie. And my God, is he good in My Cousin Vinny. So good. So, all right. And if I had to choose, Munsters or Addams Family, I'd go Munsters every time. Every time. All right. Hey, we got a break here for the news. When we come back, we'll jump right back into the conversation about TV families, and then we'll have a Blackhawks Express to play in a little while before the show ends. We'll break here. The news is up after this.
Thank you, frailty. Thank you, consequence.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5. It's not a triple play because we're running short of time, so it's just a twofer. But who picked the Alanis?
That's coming to us from Jay.
Jay picking Alanis Morissette, who has the strangest singing cadence of any person ever.
Do you remember when Jimmy Fallon parodied that song for Halloween on SNL?
I do.
Thank you, Mike and Ike. Thank you, Candy Corn. Thank you, Smarties.
Yeah. Yeah, that was when he was doing sort of his Adam Sandler kind of songs on Update. And I can't stand Jimmy Fallon now. I can't stand him on Tonight Show, and I hated him on his late night show, but I liked him on SNL. I don't care what anybody says. You know, I think people in retrospect are going, oh, he sucked. He sucks all the time because he's so bad as a late night host. But he was funny on SNL.
He had some funny. Pretty great moments.
He did. He was funny. That DJ stuff that he did. Then we're back! Man of the box, get in the box! That character was hilarious. And Nick Burns, your company's computer guy, move! Funny character. The IT guy who makes fun of you because you don't know how to fix your computer.
Mm-hmm.
He was great with Tina Fey on Weekend Update. I thought he was funny on that show.
French Stewart.
Yeah, it's French Stewart on Jeopardy. He was solid, man. He was solid on SNL. And then, like, he got his own talk show, and I was like, uh-oh. But, yeah, I do. And that song, isn't that the one where she's all naked in that? Like, she's naked on the bus and naked in the Walgreens?
Man, I wasn't listening to a ton of Alanis Morissette. I won't lie to you.
Because you were not a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
When that Jagged Little Pill came out, oh, my God. I was bartending at Ginger's Ale House. Every any woman who walked up to that jukebox would play at least two songs off of that record. That was a huge album.
Yeah,
I will say this: not a big fan. I think she's. I don't like. I mean, that,
you don't
like,
actively dislike
actually,
her.
Actually, I like that song.
It's a good song.
I like. Thank you. But the song that I love that she did is "Uninvited" from the Wings of Desire remake with Nicolas Cage and what the hell was the name of that movie? City of Angels.
Mm-hmm.
That is a great song. That's "Uninvited" from the City of Angels soundtrack. That's a great song. But she does have the weirdest cadence when she sings. It's really sort of like how she breaks words apart and stuff. And she writes all the lyrics. It's just listen to even that song. Listen to that song. Listen to how she breaks apart the syllables of
the phrasing.
Song.
How
the
she's
phrasing,
phrasing
is so
yeah.
strange. It works.
Very unique.
She's got a very unique voice, and she's got a strong voice because she can belt. But it's kind of like the first time you ever listen to her, you're kind of like, wait a minute, that's not, you're singing that word weirdly, very, very strangely. Like her cadence and her delivery is really strange and original. So anyway, well, we'll get to hear another Alanis Morissette song before we get out of here. All right, we're talking about TV families in honor. Today is the 50th anniversary of the very first episode of The Brady Bunch. And we've been getting tons of texts and phone calls and stuff. People have a lot of fun talking about this kind of stuff. So there you go. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello, yes. I'm a big fan of the Goldbergs, which, if you haven't seen the show, the creator of the show, Adam Goldberg, based it on his own family back in the 80s, and he was a kid who videotaped everything. And at the end of each show, he'll show a little bit of his actual family to show how it's all based on the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of adds a fun element to it.
Yeah. I've actually never watched an episode of that show with the sound on, but when I get here to the studio, it's on with the sound off because Channel 9 shows that I think it starts at 11 or 11:30 or something on weeknights. So I've visually seen it, and I love Jeff Garlin. And Tobo's on it. Stephen Tobolowsky's on it. But it seems to me like every episode, whenever I look up, they're like parodying an 80s movie or an 80s TV show.
They definitely
or a music video or something like that. And I look up, they're dressed like Indiana Jones or, you know, and then they did like a whole 16 Candles thing. And I think they at one point they all dressed up like the Breakfast Club. And so that's cool. But 80s nostalgia, you know, that's what that show is all about, which is fine.
Yeah, and I know one of the kids, the only thing I recognize him from is that he was like the pudgy kid in Drillbit Taylor.
Oh, God.
Oh, do you not like Drillbit Taylor?
Oh, I hate that movie.
I liked it at the time.
I don't remember anything about that movie except that it was the first, it was at that time, the first chink in Apatow's armor.
You know who wrote the story, right?
Wait, remind me.
It was John Hughes.
Yeah. Hughes wrote the story, and Apatow brought it back. So it was John Hughes. But that was the first chink in Apatow. He didn't direct it, but he co-wrote it. He produced it. He's all over it. And that was at the time when everything that Apatow was doing, whether it was produced or wrote and directed, was a hit and funny. And then that was where it was like, oh, Apatow can make mistakes.
And then we got Funny People. Ugh.
John, thanks for the call. Yeah, The Goldbergs, very popular show. I know a lot of people who like it. I know Wendy Snyder loves it. You know, because whenever they have, because they have Tobo on, Bill and Wendy have Tobo on every once in a while. And whenever, you know, Toblowski is mentioned, she always talks about he's the principal from The Goldbergs. Among the 9,000 other television and movie appearances that Stephen Toblowski has made. Here's Becky on WGN. Hi, Becky.
Hey there. Just about every show that you have mentioned, and I can't watch Cosby's anymore because of what he did.
Of course, I totally understand. I don't watch it, and I don't listen to the albums, even though when I was a kid, I memorized every routine. You know,
it was a good show, but he ruined it.
Absolutely.
But almost everyone that you've named with the stupid cable company that I have, they are, every one of them are still on. But guess what? You missed one show.
All right.
And it's on every day. It comes on every day at 5 o'clock. I watch it every day, and I can tell you everything they're going to say before they say it. And that's the Andy Griffith Show.
Classic. Yeah. That's a classic.
With that goofy Barney.
Yeah, Barney and, you know, yeah, the Taylors. Great family. And
Andy. The only thing they ever say about Barney, Andy says he's a nut.
Yeah.
That's what it cracks me up.
Yeah.
But I watch that every day because I love that show.
It's one of my dad's favorite shows of all time, too. He watches it all the time. He loves the Andy Griffith
show. Is it really? And the other one that you said was Married with Children, I can't stand that show.
Well, that's the reaction that it gets. And there's nobody in between. I don't know anybody who thinks, it's okay. Everybody I know who watches, who has ever watched Married with Children, either loves it or absolutely hates it.
But I hate it.
Yeah.
Al Bundy, he's the village nut.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
That's
and her, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
She's on another show. Did you know that?
Well, she was on Sons of Anarchy. Mm. She's been on a bunch of stuff.
No, just not this year alone. She was in another program.
Oh, she was.
And as soon as I seen her and heard her voice on there, that was it. I changed channel.
Oh, she's
I can't stand her.
Oh, man, she's great. She's a terrific actress, Becky. You should give her a chance.
Oh, yeah.
She's
she
not always
an actress.
She's not always.
I mean, as far as the role that she plays on the show, I can't stand her.
I can understand that, but, you know, she's not playing Peg Bundy on these other shows. She's really great. Katie Sagal is a great actress. Yeah.
I just always think of her as Leela.
Yeah, I understand that. I knew she's got one big eye.
Yeah.
And Becky, thank you for the call. I love her. I love Katie Sagal. My only issue with Married with Children was this, and I realized that this is crazy because I think Katie Sagal is insanely attractive. Like, insanely attractive. And, like, voluptuous and beautiful.
The big beehive.
I don't care. She's just, I think she's like kind of jaw dropping,
sure.
Really beautiful and funny and womanly. And I just love, she's curvy and just, oh. And so every time I watch Married with Children, I'm like, why does Al resist to having sex with this woman? Like every time I'm like, are you kidding me? Like all the jokes are about he won't have sex or he doesn't want to have sex with her. And I'm like, well, are you blind? But the joke is they're married, so they don't do that. Like, he doesn't want to do it. He's miserable, and that they're married.
Mm.
You know, I remember like, everybody was talking about, you know, back in the day when the show was on, everybody was talking about how hot Christine Applegate was. I was the Katie Sagal guy when I was watching it. And again, Christine Applegate, very attractive. She's beautiful, and I love her. I especially love her now.
Yeah, I will say, my qualm with it, I'm not a fan of the show.
Yeah.
My qualm with it is that I kind of hated that it's a tired idea that married people are just miserable they're married.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get it. You know, some married people are miserable, but I hate that idea that won't be intimate with his wife solely because they are married, because there's anything else wrong with it.
But that's the whole joke of the show.
I guess I miss
it. But the show is not subtle in any way. It takes that cliche has been in TV sitcoms forever. And what it does is it amplifies it 9,000 times and makes it completely, utterly ridiculous and over the top. That's what that whole show was about. That show was about taking jokes that were stale and making them edgier and stupider. And if you thought a joke on a sitcom in the early 70s about married people was stupid, they took it and they made it as stupid as you can possibly make it. And that was the whole style of the show. I mean, it was an in-your-face, we-are-going-to-take cliches and make them even bigger and more annoying. That was the whole style of that show, and I found it refreshing. I thought it was great. Yeah. I also, you know, I know a lot of people, I love the fact that the audiences were idiots, like the studio audience. They were always, like, oohing and eyeing and yelling and cheering. Like, anytime a sexy woman walked on, they go nuts and start.
Auga.
That added to the how idiotic that show was. I mean, it's like even the audiences are idiots. And I just thought that, I don't know. I have no idea why I responded to Married with Children the way I did. And again, I can totally understand why people hate it and don't think it's funny. But for some reason, I watched the whole series. I've seen the whole series. Even when it got bad, when they brought that kid in, they brought in Seven. Again, falling under the cliche of when your show's not working, bring in cute kid. Or Ted McGinley, and they did both of those on Married with Children. They brought in Ted McGinley and a kid. But I still watched it. I don't know, for some reason that show just floored me, and it still does. I watch reruns of that show, and it just cracks me up completely. And I love the character of Al Bundy, and I love Ed O'Neill. And I love the fact that Ed O'Neill got all kinds of recognition for his work on Modern Family. And, you know, he played Popeye Doyle in the TV version of the French Connection TV series called Popeye?
Yeah.
Popeye Doyle?
A great choice.
Yeah. He's in Ford Fairlane, man. Come on. I love Ed O'Neill. I love that guy. All right, let's take a break. We're going to go with the weather here, and then after the weather, we're going to play a very unfortunate Blackhawks Express, the first of the season. We play the Blackhawks Express following the night before his game, every game that precedes us throughout the season, preseason, regular season, and postseason, of which there will be a postseason this year. So a very unfortunate from an unfortunate game last night against the Caps.
Chicago Blackhawks close out the home portion of the preseason tonight as they re-engage the Washington Capitals in a game that, for some of the young Hawk hopefuls, could be their last shot at proving they belong on an NHL roster. A long shot from the right point, that by Colby Williams, they score. Capitals take a 1-0 lead. It was a screen type of a shot. Williams gathered in the puck near the right point. Fired it toward the Hawk net. I don't think Crawford got a real good look at this. It may have been tipped on the way in as well. Caps get the puck. Here's Ovechkin with it in the right wing corner. Battling Taves. Taves knocks the puck up. The board's not out. Carlson for the right point. Fires it in front. Blocked by Seabrook. Loose puck. Look out. It rolls through the crease and wide. Carlson again for the right point. They score! I'm not sure if one of the Capitals was able to deflect that one. But there was another conga line of players in front of Corey Crawford. As Carlson let it rip, it ends up in the back of the Hawks' net, and it's 2-0 Caps. Going to break into the corner. He got locked up with one of the Caps and went down in a heap. And from his knees, he knocks the puck free. This bounces out to the right point. And Gustafson can't get over in time. Here come the Caps shorthanded. Wilson over the Hawk line, left circle. He shoots, he scores! And the Hawks surrender their second shorthanded goal of the preseason. Tom Wilson, who scored the game winner in overtime in D.C. in the Hawks' first preseason game, lights the lamp with a shot up into the top right corner. The Caps now lead 3-0. And Strome lost it up the boards. Here's a centering pass in front for Stevenson. Could not get to the loose puck. Mata did. Passing across the rink to Kane. He'll chip the puck off the right wing boards down into the cap zone. Leipzig hands it off to Carlson, now behind the Capitol net. Here's Carlson moving out. And he lost the puck. Here's Carpenter breaking toward the net. He shoots, and a big save made by Copley. Follow-up shot by Carpenter. And Copley stopped that well with a kneeling save.
Seabrook's last pass up the middle of the ice went to Jonathan Taves. It was in his skate, so it's got to be tape to tape. And as soon as Taves got that pass under control, there was a Washington Capitol player right on there. Turnover back into the Blackhawks end of the ice.
Draw one by the Caps. Here's Verana in the left wing circle. Fed the right circle. Carlson shoots. They score. I believe Lars Eller tipped that one past Corey Crawford. And it's now 4-0 in favor of the Washington Capitals. Maverick is out of the box, and the Hawks have come back to full strength. Wilson, right point, Hawks zone. Hit by Seabrook as he spins it down the boards behind the net. Eller near corner, fed the slot. Verana shoots and scores. And Jacob Verana took a pass onto his stick, turned his body in the wrist shot position, and then snapped it past Corey Crawford under the glove. It's now 5-0 in favor of the Capitals. Eller, the Caps, will move it to the near boards. And then it's poked ahead by Fairbury to Eller. Moves it in over the Hawk line on the left wing. Verana, the slot to Oshie with a backhand shot. They score. Oshie's backhand shot hit the crossbar and laid just outside the goal line to the net. And along came Eller to tap in his second goal of the night. It'll be the exclamation point for the Caps. 6-0 Washington with just over 5 minutes left. The horn will sound, ending the hockey game. 60 minutes of futility for the Blackhawks end with the Capitals winning by a big score. The final score, the Caps 6 and the Blackhawks no score. Shutout for the first time this preseason. Let's hope it's the only time this year that they're shut out. The Capitals doing a thorough job from start to finish here in this one.
All right. Not the kind of finish that, not the kind of game or finish that we like, but I will say this. It just makes me happy to hear Troy and John on the radio. It's my favorite time of year. I mean, the outcome was bad. The game was disappointing. But hockey, they're playing hockey. So I like it.
How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning?
By the way, that was Doc Emrick talking about me. The first time I heard that, I really almost passed out. Doc Emrick. Play that one more time. I just want to hear Doc Emrick mention me again. So, while we're waiting for that to re-queue, the next Hawks game is Saturday. Is this Saturday, 2 o'clock, Hawks-Bruins, right here on WGN. All right? No, it's not? It's not.
How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning?
It's the next game in Berlin.
Yeah, the next game will be the Sunday exhibition game, and that'll be on actually on AM 1000.
On AM 1000.
Yeah, we're carrying the White Sox. Our next Blackhawks broadcast will be Friday, the opener in Prague against Philadelphia at 12:30.
And Steve's going, right?
Steve is going.
Wow.
Steve's going over there, and Lauren Lapka's going over there. We'll have a big contingent in Prague.
Yeah, that's going
to
be fun.
You ought to be there, Nick.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. By the way, did you know that Doc Emrick mentioned me?
I did know that.
Just wanted to make sure you knew that.
We know Doc loves this station. He listens 24/7.
Yeah, I was just shocked, because you know I admire the guy so much.
Oh,
and when he mentioned me, I almost fell over. I was like, what?
I remember that.
Yeah, so that's it's Berlin, and we can listen. But the next one that we're going to broadcast is the home opener.
It's the opener in Prague. Yep.
Okay, very cool. All right, thank you, Dave.
You bet.
All right. Hey, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, let me rattle off a few families here. We got the TV families that everybody has been mentioning really, really quickly. We got to talk about the Bunkers. We got to mention the Bunkers and All in the Family. The Cunninghams. We got the Griffins and Family Guy. We got the Simpsons, obviously. The Keatons and Family Ties. The Clampets and Beverly Hillbillies. The Bluths and Arrested Development. One of my favorites.
How much could a banana cost? $10?
The Evanses in Good Times. And then, of course, we got to mention the Cleavers in Leave It to Beaver. So those are some classic TV families. And congratulations on the 50th anniversary of the Brady Bunch. All right. Tomorrow, what do we got going tomorrow? We got an Irish filmmaker who's got a movie coming out that's going to be playing at the Siskel Film Center. And he's going to be joining us live from Dublin.
He will not be in Dublin. He will be. He'll actually be coming to Chicago.
Oh.
So he'll be talking to us tomorrow, giving us a call.
I think he's from Kerry.
Yeah.
I think he's from Kerry, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, we'll take a quick break. By the way, his name is Shawnee Shagrew.
Do, 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 do.
Exactly right. Okay, the news is coming up.